Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the City of Arroyo Grande. This is our City Council meeting, and it is Tuesday, August 26th. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Here.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Here. We're very pleased this evening to have the Arroyo Grande Lions Club here to do our flag salute. Mike Furman is here to do that for us. If you would please remain standing for our invocation. Pastor Randy Wimette is here from St. John's Lutheran Church, and Randy is also the Five Cities Fire Authority chaplain.
If you'd all rise and please place your hand over your heart, follow along with me as we say, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let us unite in prayer. O God of creation, rock of all ages, you formed us in your image. You fashioned us into families and communities so that we may live securely and faithfully. We humbly and urgently ask your spirit for strength, your light for discernment, and your strong arm for disciplining love. Give wisdom to our council and city staff that they may lead our city with honesty and humility, competency, and transparency. Open the eyes and hearts of the residents of Rio Grande that we may listen and speak this evening to the important issues at hand with your respect and with your love. So tonight we ask for your merciful and redeeming guidance, Lord. Move all of us from heat to light by your amazing grace. In your holy and precious name we pray. Amen.
Thank you, Pastor. Much appreciated. Mike, you know the drill. We get to hear about Lions Club, all the things you've got going.
Thank you. The Lions Club in Arroyo Grande was formed in 1949, so we are in our 65th year of providing services to this community. We are part of a larger organization, Lions Club International, which is the largest service organization in the world. Our primary mission is vision. Taking it back to the local level, each year the Lions Clubs of San Luis Obispo County provide sight services to over 4,000 children in school, be that public schools, private schools, religious schools. We test them all. If a child needs help, we see that they get the help. If they cannot afford that help, the Lions Club sees that the help is still provided. In addition to our sight programs, we provide a whole lot of other services to the community. We start out, we're one of the major sponsors of Harvest Fest. We do the turkey trot each year for the kids around Thanksgiving. We have the basketball tournaments for our junior high school kids, both male and female, every winter. We provide barbecue services for a whole bunch of functions, including the father-daughter dance, which is just a hoot. I thank everybody who's involved in that. That's so much fun. We provide food for the Civil War encampment at the junior high school each year. We can go on for quite a while, but the important part is we have a great deal of fun providing services to this community. We get a lot in return. We appreciate the opportunity to serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. We appreciate the good work that the Lions do, and you know how to barbecue. Okay, moving on in our agenda, item 5 is agenda review. Item 5A, closed session announcements. The council did meet in closed session on August 12th where we discussed labor issues, and we have no report out of closed session at this time. 5B, move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries. Item 6 is special presentations. We have none this evening. Item 7 is community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on items not on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters not posted on the agenda. We would ask that you keep your comments brief, 3 minutes or less, and please address the council as one body. Anyone who would like to come forward, closed session, or I'm sorry, community comments and suggestions, please come. And if we could get your name, please, for the record.
My name is Bob Querry. I'm a member of the Arroyo Grande Public Art Committee, and I would just like to tell a pleasant story. It has to do with you guys approving the mural. I was at a meeting last week where somebody was showing the history of Oceano, and they presented one of the slides of the corner there at the railroad depot, and several people in the audience said, "I recognize that from the mural." And I just wanted to say thank you for all your support and the help of the planning department and the city in general for making that happen. So just thank you very much.
It's a great mural, and we appreciate the work that the Public Art Committee has done as well.
And it's meaningful to a lot more than just a few people who were involved.
Good. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Good evening, Mayor and council members. I'm Heather Jensen. I live in Arroyo Grande, and I'm just speaking tonight as a 40-plus year resident of Arroyo Grande. And for all those years, I have been very proud to live here and enjoyed all the amenities and the camaraderie of the community, the business community, and just all Arroyo Grande stands for. But I do have to bring up the brouhaha that has happened in the last 6 weeks. And it brings great sadness to me because it has certainly tainted the look of Arroyo Grande. And when someone is feeling so emotional in defending Arroyo Grande, I feel that it's only fair that I don't know the steps that this happens, but the council, the staff, whoever is in charge of making such a move, we need to, I'm asking you, to authorize or dedicate or whoever does this an independent study of the whole incident that went on July 3rd, and whenever else it has been going on. Just to prove to the community and to take away the cloud, the fog, that has tainted the community the last few weeks since this has come out. And I'm very sad to bring that out in a public comment like this, but I think it's high time, and I'm very disappointed that the city council didn't bring it out sooner, that it certainly created a mystery of such, and especially when there was the in-house investigation with the assistant city attorney. I think that only added to the mystery of the whole incident. And I hope that you will take these comments to heart with a lot of other community members like myself that would like it clarified one way or the other so we can move forward, but we have all the details with us. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments, Heather.
Yes. I'm not an actual resident of your community, but I did listen to that prayer prior to there, and the one word that came out to me above all was transparency. And you hear that word a lot, transparency. And sometimes you wonder, what does it mean? Not telling the truth and hiding the truth, or telling the truth and let it all be out there? Well, a lot of times it goes both ways, and I think that word sometimes has a double meaning to it, because I don't know what this incident evolves with this situation you have here. However, here's what I do know. We people out there who trust in the government and are held to be accountable for the laws that the government makes and that we are held accountable for and that we're responsible for, and that we pay the price if we don't accommodate by those laws and rules. And then sometimes government doesn't seem to want to play by those rules or be transparent about those rules. And I see out there what's happening in governments, and this government affects all the governments. It affects all the people of our county, not just this little community, what's happening here. Because what's happening here is it seems like maybe we're not getting all the story. Does Cal Coast News have to be the bad guy all the time and expose some of the things that don't want to be exposed, and then they look like the bad guy? Do the police want to be the bad guy? No. I mean, look what's happening in Ferguson, Mississippi. What a tragedy. Not for just the gentleman, but for the police, okay, who's being tried already. There hasn't even been an absolute report on it, and it goes both ways, like I said, transparency. So I would say get it out there for the public to see so the people can trust you, because as in many times, not always, the government can't be trusted all the time. And that's what's tragedy, because we depend on your trust.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. May I ask the name of this?
Can we get your name for the record, please?
My name's Dane Sensor.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. I think it's time that this city have a clear understanding with all employees that city buildings are to be used for city business only. Doesn't that matter? Also, with the initiative on the ballot for a charter city, you guys are asking us to give you more power. With power comes trust. I also would like to ask for an independent investigation to get to the bottom of this matter so that as citizens, we feel we can trust the people we put in power. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Next speaker, please. And if we could get your name up front.
Sure. It's Ron McAvoy, and I'm a newcomer to the community. I've only been here 23 years. First, I would just want to thank the mayor and the council for doing the job that you do for the residents of Arroyo Grande. I think you do a great job. I think all of you have integrity. I'm going to suggest, and that's what this public comment period is about, is a suggestion to the council. There is this brouhaha out there in the public. I think what you gentlemen did, and lady person, was review what happened at that particular incident. And you went ahead and made a decision that there was no further need for another investigation. That I know in human resources, when it comes to problems there, there are so many things that are confidential that nobody can say anything about anything when it comes to human resources where there is a problem. But my suggestion would be to contemplate some type of another investigation. And I'm hoping that it's not an outside counsel from San Francisco that's going to cost us $100,000 when we have, you know, not necessarily financial problems, but money is always tight. But maybe another internal, more in-depth investigation to determine if there really was anything that was against the contract of the manager that was involved in that particular incident. And I say an incident only because the police and the fire department were there, and it becomes an incident. And that's really all. Just offering a suggestion. But thank you for sitting up there and looking out for the residents of Arroyo Grande.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the comments. Next speaker.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Aaron Hinkle. I reside at 196 South Alpine here in AG. I don't think it even matters what transpired between those two, if anything. That's not even the issue. The issue is trust, transparency, and sweeping things under the rug. City material, equipment, whatever, is supposed to be used for official business only. The fact that the individuals went back into City Hall after hours, for whatever reason, they're not on the clock, they shouldn't be there. I'm a government employee, I can't do that with any of my government equipment. It's not for me to use, for my personal use at all. And the fact that this board attempted to keep it quiet makes the appearance very bad. I'm a little old-fashioned, I was raised here, born here, and my grandpa would say, if it looks like a skunk, smells like a skunk, it's usually a skunk. So I think we need to get a grand jury to look at all of this. Look at your board, our city management, the city attorney, everything. This is ridiculous. This is a big scar on a little community that we don't need. There's no reason for it. You all need to start coming clean with your constituents. We elected you in there. You're supposed to be there for us, not to take care of Mr. Adams because he's a good guy, and I'm not saying he's not. But now when I have issues with city, with things inside this city, I don't know who I'm going to turn to, because now I'm going to look at Mr. Adams a little differently or Teresa a little differently. And it's not saying that they aren't good people. That's not what I'm saying at all. But now perception is reality. Until somebody shows me any different, my reality is things have changed. So who do I bring my issues up to? You as a board? I don't think you want to hear what I think about some of the city staff when there's issues in the city that are very much big liability issues. That's not what you're here for. That's what Mr. Adams is for. But now I have a serious problem internally on how I'm going to deal with this because of the trust issue. I really think that this community ought to get a grand jury in here and look at all this.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Next speaker.
First, I want to thank each one of you for serving. I know all of you except for Kristen, and you're precious to me. I'm very sad to see what has happened. I'm asking for this council to be transparent. That's the reason why you decided to run in the first place, because you thought that the government before you was not. Now you're being looked at it in the same way you looked at others, and that should really count. I'm asking you to consider an independent investigation. I'm asking for the staff to inform us what policies govern this particular matter and how is it enforced. And I'm asking for the city to consider that these lawsuits that come forth because you guys aren't doing your job the way you should cost us money. And we trust you to put you in office. I'm asking you to honor that trust.
Need to get your name, Charlotte.
Sorry. Charlotte Wilson, Aurora Grande.
Okay, thanks. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
My name is John Mack, 1501 Loganberry. Been doing business here for over 30 years. I know business has changed this past year. The reason why I know is because I've been trying to put a project through for the past year. This whole incident, it's not a matter of fact or whether you investigate it or not, it happened. The reason why I'm here is because it affects the way I'm able to process a project through the city. I came before, and I won't go into detail, but I came with a project that I thought was being mishandled. I go before Mr. Adams for help, and all I had was cover-up from a glitch. That can't go on. If anything needs to happen, we need to run this city efficiently, the way it was intended, the way our whole system works. We just can't have it affected by this, because it doesn't work. There's favoritism going on with the projects. There's favoritism going on. And then there's things being added on to staff reports in the 11th hour, six, 8 months later, a year later, that shouldn't be going on. And we need clarity. We need to be able to function. Me as an applicant bringing a project before staff, it needs to get processed the right way and handled the right way and not covered up. I think Mr. Adams knows what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, John. Anyone else who would like to come forward? That mic down, Manetta.
I haven't got a very good voice tonight. I'm Manetta Bennett. I live at 415 Allen Street, Arroyo Grande, forever. I am bringing up the subject of the development on Cherry Avenue, Cherry Lane, whatever you want to call it. It is going to be a big development with many houses, and I see the city. I see by the planning that they do not intend to widen Cherry Avenue, Cherry Lane. I object to this. I think it needs to be widened, even though it makes a little oomph, which everybody said we didn't like. I don't mind an oomph. I want a wider street. I am concerned about the development. I'm losing my voice. Thank you, everybody. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Minetta. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Kevin Rice, San Luis Obispo. I'm here about the incident on July 3rd. I really have a problem with the opaqueness of the city on that incident, withholding records, withholding information. Personnel actions are personnel actions, but the records that pertain to that action are not part of the personnel action. Police reports, memoranda, surrounding documents, those are not part of the personnel file, and those records need to be disclosed, and I'm here to ask you to disclose those. I've submitted to you a public records request today and one the other day, which I've already transmitted via email. And I've also submitted a Brown Act complaint regarding the opaqueness of the council, because it appears that an investigation was requested by the council, and statements in the press indicate that the results of that investigation were considered, but there was never anything on the agenda indicating that the council considered the results of that investigation. So I believe that the council has been non-transparent, and I don't like the whole cover-up feel of the matter. I have records request hard copies and Brown Act complaint hard copy, which I'd like to offer to your city clerk. Thank you.
Okay. Was that it? Okay. Thanks for your comments. Anyone else?
My name is Beatrice Spencer. I live at 416 Colado Corte in Arroyo Grande. To say that a lot of us are really rather disturbed by this incident is an understatement. We're told that there's no further investigation required since no one reported seeing or hearing anything improper. But if the council does not deem the incident of July 3rd as improper behavior, then we're to assume it is proper to be at city offices, although not engaged in city business, after hours with a supervisor or a subordinate employee with the lights out. In spite of the fact that emergency responders arrived on the scene, two people who were perfectly capable of allowing them entry into the building did not. Not until another officer arrived to unlock the Knox box were they allowed entry and discovered or reported an uncomfortable situation. I have a copy of Mr. Adams' most current contract, and on page, sorry, my eyes are not as good as they used to be. On page 5, there is a section here that says, in the event employee is terminated for good cause, the city shall have no obligation to pay the sum designated, blah, 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 blah. But conduct unbecoming the position of city manager or likely to bring discredit or embarrassment to the city is listed under that clause. If this isn't an embarrassment, I don't know what is. As an employer, there isn't anyone that would be allowed in our property after hours, in the dark, without permission at any time, period. Doesn't matter if they're there waiting off their hangover. That even makes it more inappropriate, because under the personal regulations section of something that was approved or presented by Mr. Adams on March 25th, there is a section D called behavior. And under that, item 1 says improper employee conduct. The term improper conduct means not only an improper action by an employee in the employee's official capacity, but also conduct by an employee not connected with the employee's official duties that brings a discredit to the city or that affects the ability to perform the employee's duties officially or any improper use of the position as an employee for personal advantage. improper conduct includes, but is not limited to, the following. And there are several things which obviously do not pertain here, but item E says, inattention to duty, tardiness, indolence, carelessness, or damage to or negligence in the care of handling of city property. Now, I don't believe that just means a vehicle or a stapler or something like that. I think property means city property. And if someone can be terminated for claiming sick leave under false pretenses, then I think what happened on July the 3rd definitely falls into the category of improper employee conduct. So I think we need to reconsider what has happened here, because this has gone beyond the point of just being a personnel matter. The fact that two people used extremely poor judgment.
Can you wrap it up?
Okay.
Beatrice.
Is unfortunate, but this has brought more than just a little bit of embarrassment to the city of Arroyo Grande. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Shirley Gibson, and I had 2 points to make. Number one, anything on the police log should be available to the public. So I think the city needs to figure out how to remedy the situation. And number two, I'm kind of disheartened that all these people are here tonight. Many times my mother and I come to do battle with the city about different projects, mainly historic properties. And I do mean, I feel like we do battle. Apathy is the best friend of the city council, because they prefer not to have anyone come and challenge them. So what I wanted to point out tonight is about the Cherry Street development. It's going to be 51 houses. And if you look there, that's East Cherry, and then that's Traffic Way. And this is where they're developing. And, you know, I think this is every bit as important as the brouhaha tonight. When you're sitting on East Cherry and trying to turn left onto Traffic Way, it'll be important to you. I think there's issues with water, the density of 51 properties, and mainly traffic. Allen Street and East Cherry are both very narrow streets. And how are, you know, that number of houses, how's that going to affect, you know, what is already a serious problem? So I encourage people to stay involved in this matter. It's not on the agenda or calendar as yet, but it will be coming back. And I think it's time for people to pay attention. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Hi, I'm Laura Mordaunt. I live in San Luis Obispo in the county. And I experienced this with my city council, which is really the Board of Supervisors, with Bruce Gibson and his legislative aide. It changes the perspective of city employees, county employees, because they begin to wonder, what are the rules? What does it mean? What's right? What's wrong? And they did not have an independent investigation. The fox guarding the hen house. That's the feeling we all had. We talked about it. There were more people than are here tonight. And we spoke and spoke many times. There were many people, large number of people. Nothing changed. There was no independent investigation. They sat much as you are. And then after we finish speaking, I suspect you will say nothing. It's not on the agenda, isn't that right? Public speaking is not on the agenda. We can speak, but unless our topic is on the agenda, it doesn't get spoken back by you. So you need to put it on the agenda, and other citizens need to come here and speak. But do the numbers matter? You need to look at intention. What is right and wrong? Do we not have that anymore? What do we teach our young people? Are these the values of our young people now? So think about it. Your role models? And if you're all good people, then have an independent investigation and do not write two legal documents that say it's okay to have sex with your boss, which is what happened at the Board of Supervisors. Because that changes the landscape.
Okay, thanks for your comments. Anyone else?
Sue Schmandel, I'm an Aurora Grande resident. I always like to think the best of everyone rather than the worst. And my feeling right now is just what this whole situation has created with the rest of the employees in the city. And I think for clarity, I will never in my life use the word transparency if I can avoid it again, because I don't think transparency is an honest word anymore. So I just am speaking for the residents and for the city employees, thinking that I'm sure everybody now has a very uncomfortable feeling in their work situation because of the lack of openness. That's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you for comments. Anyone else? Sure.
I'm Annetta Bennett, and I forgot to say what I meant to say, which is important. I have been talking to my neighbors in my area. I have written letters. Nobody knows anything about the project. Well, we've never heard of it, they said. So I think the city needs to do something about making this more prominent to people that this is a project in the future and that they need to learn a little bit about it. Please, thank you.
You're talking about the Cherry project?
About the Cherry okay. Avenue. Yes, like I say, I am sending letters out. I am calling people on the telephone. I am walking a little bit in the neighborhood, and nobody says, well, I didn't know anything about it. I never read it in the paper. I didn't see it or anything.
Okay.
So we need more communication. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Good evening, Council. My name is Cynthia Larcio. I am born and raised in Aurora Grande, born in Aurora Grande Hospital, never left. Been here all 47 years of my life. Never been embarrassed to be a resident until now. When I have people at my work asking what's going on in Aurora Grande now, I shake my head. Not only am I embarrassed, what about your employees? They don't know who to go to. You've set yourself up for a hostile work environment where your employees can easily file any type of lawsuit they would like to because of a hostile work environment. That's what you have created here with that incident on July 3rd. Again, I have never been embarrassed to be a resident until now. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
Evening. Gail Lightfoot, I have a question. On all of the minutes that I pulled up and the agendas, it says that public may comment on a closed agenda prior, closed meeting prior to that meeting, but we never know what the meeting's about. It just says, I looked up the code, it says you're allowed to have closed meetings. But if I don't know what your closed meeting is about, how can I make a comment? Sir? What's the legal position?
Generally, I'll answer your question. Generally, closed session items are listed by topic. For example, if we are having a closed session on a city attorney's evaluation or another employee's evaluation, or if it's a labor issue. It's usually listed by title.
Exactly, so, exactly. But you had a closed session involving the incident with Steve, and all it says is their names. We don't know what that's about, and we didn't find out about it till it came out in the papers.
Yeah, it was listed as on the agenda as a city manager's evaluation.
Yeah, well, that could be his quarterly or biannually or whatever evaluation. We don't know. And, of course, to see this in the newspaper first is probably the worst possible thing for everyone.
Okay. Thanks, Gail. Anyone else?
Yes, my name's William Wagner. I'm from Santa Maria. I haven't been here since we were fighting the poison issue they wanted to put of class one poison in your water called fluoride. That was the last time I was down here. I think you have a duty. There's a word called moral turpitude. And I think you need to put that into a contract, even if it has to be retroactively done, to use it in the future. If you don't fire Mr. Adams post haste, if you don't at the very least fire the lady that was with them, for which nobody wants to get into the business, then at the very least, they should have taken a motel. And you should charge them the motel bed tax. At the very least. But really, I want to tell you what happens when you let corruption go on. There was a man named Lyndon. He stole things left and right while working for a congressman. Then he ran for Congress. Then he stole the 1948 U.S. Senate election. Literally stole it. Then he ganged up with a CIA agent and an FBI director named J. Edgar Hoover to collaborate in the assassination on November 22, 1963, of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, just so Lyndon Baines Johnson could be president. And all this was being documented by a woman named Kilgallen. Dorothy Kilgallen used to appear on I've Got a Secret, and then she was suddenly dead. Philip Nelson came out with a book last year called LBJ, The Mastermind of the JFK Assassination. And my word to you is, if you won't fire this person for their minor indiscretions, and you won't even charge them the bed tax, and I'm talking specifically to you, Mr. Adams, you are promoting another potential future criminal of the likes of Lyndon Baines Johnson. And I don't think that's what you really want to go down on the record for doing. And I see it in Santa Barbara County. We see this corruption. We had a city manager having sex, and the husband of the woman he was having sex came down to the city council, and Mayor Larry said, take that business. This is not the proper place to discuss it. And the man said, well, if this isn't and you employ him, where is the proper place to discuss it? This is the proper place to discuss it. And for you to hide behind secrecy and say, oh, personnel matter, well, you can just fire people and you don't have to give a good reason. Everybody knows. But at the very least, charge them the bed tax they cheated the city and the county out of. I mean, that is a really small slap on the hand. But
I'm conclude your comments, please.
Yes, Mayor Tony Ferrer, I will.
Your 3 minutes are up.
Thank you. But you're protecting corruption. It leads to greater corruption. That was my point. If Lyndon Baines Johnson had been stopped in 1948, Kennedy wouldn't have been assassinated in 63. It's in Nelson's book. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. We have one last speaker, and I know that some of you have commented on the investigation in one form or another. We were trying to at least get as much information out as we possibly could on the nature of the investigation and the information that the council had in front of us. And so the gentleman who has done this for us is Michael McMahon. He is here today, and so what I wanted Michael to do after listening to your comments was speak to that investigation, and I'm not certain that it will do any good, but at least you'll understand what we knew at the time. Beyond this, I'm going to close the public comment. We do have other business. It's a short agenda, so I expect we're going to get to to council communications fairly soon. When we get to council communication, because this was not on the agenda, the matter that's before us, obviously, that all of you are concerned about, not on the agenda, council communication is that point in time when members of the council will determine if this is a matter that we do want to put on the agenda and make a determination at that point if there's going to be any further action taken, another investigation, so on and so forth. We cannot make the decision tonight on the nature of another investigation because it's not on the agenda, but we can schedule it for another council meeting and then make the determination at that time. So that's the way we have to operate. Michael?
Sit down, maybe that'll be easier. On July 6th, I was first notified that my assistance would be requested in investigating an incident to which the Arroyo Grande Police Department responded at City Hall on July 3rd. On Monday, July 7th, I received written statements prepared by officers who responded to City Hall on the evening of July 3rd. I was asked to review those statements and determine whether any evidence of a city violation of a city policy, employment agreement, regulation, or law had occurred, because concern had been raised about a potential of improper sexual conduct between Mr. Adams and Ms. McClish. Before I began interviewing witnesses, I had absolutely no contact with Mayor Ferrara, any city council member, or Mr. Adams. I was not asked to skew the results in any way to reach any particular conclusion. I was not told to avoid any questions or required to ask any specific questions. I was asked to determine what the witnesses saw and heard and undertook that task without any preconceived notion about what occurred. I spoke to Police Chief Annibali to let him know I would be speaking to police officers and to request his assistance in arranging those interviews. In more than 22 years as an attorney, most of my experience has been in litigation, and I have taken hundreds of depositions and questioned and cross-examined numerous witnesses in trial. I've also been involved in disciplinary proceedings involving public employees. One of my goals in interviewing the officers was to determine whether they saw or heard anything that they failed to include in their statements. I did not shy away from asking difficult questions of anyone who was at City Hall on the evening of July 3rd. Not a single officer provided any information beyond what was contained in his written statement that would support the conclusion that any improper sexual conduct had occurred. Neither did Ms. McClish or Mr. Adams. After determining what everyone at City Hall that evening had to say, I felt that no evidence supported the conclusion that Mr. Adams violated his employment agreement, regulation, or law, or engaged in any improper sexual conduct. None of the officers saw or heard any sexual conduct. Officers did not know what Mr. Adams and Ms. McClish were doing in City Hall before they arrived. Some officers may have speculated, but investigations are based on evidence and not speculation. Mr. Adams and Ms. McClish stated that no sexual conduct took place. They also stated that neither of them was wholly or partially unclothed at any time while in Mr. Adams' office. They both stated that they had consumed alcohol that evening at a restaurant opening across from City Hall and were waiting to ensure that they could drive home safely. I notified Mr. Carmel of what my interviews revealed. Had any evidence supported the conclusion that any improper sexual conduct took place, I would have notified Mr. Carmel of that fact. If I believed an additional investigation would have revealed any conduct that violated an employment agreement, policy, regulation, or law, I would have recommended an additional investigation. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Michael. We're going to close community comments and suggestions. I would invite you to it shouldn't take us too long to get to council communication if you'd like to stick around and see what the council determines, you're more than welcome to do that. Okay, we're going to move on to item 8, our consent agenda. This is normally a group of items that the council approves in one motion. Unless there is an item on consent that a member of the council would like to pull for an independent action, further clarification, or additional questions. If you're following along on the agenda tonight, we're going to be addressing consent items 8A through 8G. And this is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on any of those items on consent. And we would invite you to do that now if you so choose. Any comments on 8A through 8G?
Tony, I have a correction to my statements at the last meeting. Should I just give it to Kelly?
Sure, that'd be good if you could do that, Gail.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone who would like to comment on the consent agenda? Okay, seeing no one, we'll close public comment on the consent agenda. We'll bring it to the council. What is the will of the council this evening? Any items?
No items.
No items to pull? Okay, I'll entertain a motion to approve consent items 8A through 8G.
So moved.
All right, we have a motion and a second discussion. Hearing none, anything to read in there this evening, David?
Yes, Mr. Mayor, item 8G, the title of the ordinance, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending section 3.08.020E of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code regarding bidding thresholds under the Uniform Public Construction Cost Accounting Act.
Okay, thank you. If there's nothing else, roll call, please.
Just to clarify for the record, Mrs. Gail Lightfoot requested a minor change in the minutes of August 12th, where it states, speaking from the public was Gail Lightfoot, inquiring whether an emergency medical technician could... You might want to read that.
It says that I inquired about whether CPR could be administered, and what I said was, as a retired RN, I felt it could be administered under the conditions.
Okay, you got that?
With that correction.
Okay, with that correction, motion and second. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Moving on to item 9, public hearings. We have none this evening. Item 10, continued business, consideration of a water conservation public education program and a water shortage contingency plan ordinance. And Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. At the June 10th meeting, the City Council approved a set of comprehensive strategies to address the city's long-term water supply needs and to protect the city's groundwater table. Staff was directed that time to come back with two items, which we're doing this evening. The first was to provide more information on the proposed public education program. The second was to provide recommendations on a water shortage contingency plan. I do want to emphasize that it's important not to completely lump those two items together, though, because they do have two distinctive purposes. On the one hand, the water shortage contingency plan is really designed to address water shortage situations that are due to droughts and other emergencies. There was some confusion, though, I think, last time on the public education program. The public education program is not designed just to educate the public on the need to conserve because of the current drought. The public education program is really designed to help address our long-term water supply needs, and therefore it's going to need to be an ongoing program. There are actually three key objectives of the water conservation public education program. The first is to educate the public on programs and incentives that are being offered by the city to residents to make permanent reductions in their water use. The second objective is to actually change people's behaviors with regard to water use. And so
Other examples of public education programs like no smoking campaigns, those type of things. It's much like that. You need a very ongoing, consistent message reminding people not to waste water, to take shorter showers, etc. And then the third objective is to educate the community on the best ways that they can easily reduce their water use. So those are the three things that it's really designed to try to promote. At the June meeting, just to recap some of the discussion, I think Councilmember Brown had some concerns with the cost of the program, and so we've come back and reduced the cost from approximately about $100,000 the first year to about $70,000 the first year, and that's largely by partnering with the city of Pismo Beach. We also anticipate, and they've allocated $60,000 already towards the program. We anticipate that Grover Beach and Oceano may add on to the program later on. They're not part of the initial program. It would probably be in a smaller amount, and so they would only participate in particular components of the program, but it would enable us to expand it more at that time. But at this time, we're promoting the initial partnership between Pismo Beach and Arroyo Grande. Also, in terms of cost, always keep in mind the cost proposed for these type of programs as far as what we think it will deliver in reduced water usage is minimal when you compare the cost of acquiring the same level of water in new water supply, and so that's why we think it's very cost efficient. Mayor Ferrara made some suggestions about trying to do some more work in-house, doing some videos in-house that we could put on Channel 20, and so we are working on a script to do that. And then lastly, Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie, who made the motion, wanted to see more details and information on the proposed public education program. So since that time, we issued a request for qualifications and received three responses. A review committee selected Verdon Marketing and to prepare a more extensive proposal to present to the council for consideration. And so they have done that. They're here this evening to make a presentation on that to you. And so once I get through the rest of the summary of my report, I'm going to ask them to come up and make a presentation on their proposed program. The second item we're presenting is alternatives for a water shortage contingency plan. And the first thing I really want to emphasize is that we are not proposing at this time any additional household restrictions on water use at this time. However, if this drought continues, by next year, we're projecting that we could have some serious water shortage issues to have to deal with. And so, a few years ago, if you recall, we had put almost all our mandatory water conservation measures into a permanent state in our municipal code. So we made them permanent. And so in our municipal code now, the only additional restrictions that we can enact if a situation gets worse is that we can declare the final stage of emergency, whereby all outside water use would be prohibited. And that takes place when the city is using 100% of its water supply. However, staff feels that there's going to be circumstances and conditions much more complicated than that that would warrant us to develop and implement these type of restrictions on a much more proactive basis. And so what we're proposing this evening is to develop an ordinance that we can have in place that could be easily enacted when we get to the time where we may need to quickly enact those restrictions later on. The difficulty in doing this is that there's no simple or completely fair way to structure strict household water restrictions. And so what we've done is we've identified a couple alternatives for council consideration so we can get some feedback from you before we actually draft the ordinance. And as I say, so we've developed two very distinctive alternatives, and they're based on a lot of research from what other jurisdictions do. And what we found is most jurisdictions fall into one or two of these categories, and they're pretty evenly distributed around the state, so there's two distinctive kind of methods to consider. The first we referred to as the term we came up with, it was household allocation methodology, whereby each household would be allocated a specific amount of water, and that water would be based on our projection of water supply need at that time. And then staff is proposing that a household's allocation would increase for households over four people, and then there would be another increase if they had a household over seven people. Any household exceeding their allocation, a penalty would be automatically charged on the next bill. The second alternative we are referring to is the historical use methodology, and whereby each household would be required to reduce a specified percentage that would also be based on the amount of reduction that the city needed at any given time based upon our water supply projections. And once again, a penalty would be charged if they didn't meet their water conservation goals. Now, the most significant issue in doing this, and it's really a policy decision, and that's why we want to get direction from the council before we go too far on this, is how do you define fairness in setting these up? On the one hand, when you use the historical use method, household allocation method, every household gets the same amount of a water allocation unless you get an increase based on household size. So it seems pretty fair from that standpoint. The practical result is you'll have very large properties having to reduce substantial amounts, and then you'll have small properties having to reduce very small amounts. So it'll be very disparate in terms of the amount of conservation that each property will have to do. The historical use method, on the other hand, would require everybody to do their fair share of the conservation. However, we will probably receive complaints from households that have already been doing a lot of conservation, feeling that they've been penalized for the reductions that they've already made. So those are kind of the pros and cons that we're dealing with here. There's some other pros and cons we put in your staff report, but those are kind of the key issues. Staff is recommending a hybrid approach where we would establish two water emergency stages. So a stage one emergency would be when one or both of our water supply one or both of our water supplies were impacted to the point that we began projecting that overall water supply would not meet overall water demand within the next six-month period. And that's why I said we want to be proactive. So once we got to that point that it was apparent, we'd want to start implementing these things. In that case, we're proposing the historical use method where each household would have to reduce a certain percentage. But to try to address the potential complaints that it's not fair to those that have already been doing a lot of conservation, what we're proposing is that the amount or the percentage that each household would have to decrease would escalate based on tier. So tier one would have to conserve a small percentage because they're low water users. Tier two would have to conserve a larger percentage because they're using more water. And then tier three would have to conserve a much larger percentage. So everybody would have to participate, everybody would conserve some, but based on what kind of water user you are, it would escalate as far as what your responsibilities are. So that would be the stage one. And once again, under that proposed program, there would be a penalty charged on each account that did not meet those targets on each bill. And the way, I don't know if I mentioned, the way it would be determined is you'd compare your water use to the same billing period the prior year, and that would be the comparable period in determining if you've met your goal. Now, a stage two, what we're defining as a stage two emergency, would be when our projected water supply will not meet our projections to meet basic health and safety needs for water. And so those minimum amounts of water needed per household to meet basic health and safety needs, if we projected that we were not going to be able to meet that, stage two would be declared. And in those instances, we might have to find emergency sources of water. We might need to be trucking in water. We're not sure. But we would only want to be allocating the basic minimum to each household to get by. So in that case, we are recommending that the household allocation method be used, because each household that would then be allocated that very minimal amount of water needed for health and safety purposes. And we're recommending that under that scenario, that because we'd have severe restrictions on actual water supply, that the penalties would be more severe. The first penalty, offense would be a penalty charged on their bill. The second offense could be a misdemeanor. And then the third offense, or past that, the city would have the right to actually place water restriction devices at the address. So, as I said, these are all kind of developed recommendations based on a combination of what other jurisdictions are doing that we've looked at. Commercial customers are a little more complicated because there's not a lot of reductions they can do without impacting public health and safety. And so we just recommended some basic changes for them. Immediately, we're recommending that the ordinance include restrictions that in restaurants, anybody needing water would have to ask for water to get water in a restaurant, and that hotels would have to advertise to customers that towels, if they didn't want to use the towels over again, that they'd leave them out, and or if they wanted towels washed, they'd have to leave them out, otherwise the towels wouldn't be washed, which is pretty common in most establishments now. For other commercial businesses, for all outdoor landscaping in stage one, we'd recommend a percentage reduction, and then in stage two, we would recommend for commercial businesses no outside irrigation. So that concludes the summary on that. What I'd like to do is have Mary give her presentation on the public education program. If you could ask your questions about that proposal, and then we can come back to the ordinance and the other proposals, and I am Jeff English is also here to answer your questions.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council, for having us here tonight. We're really excited to talk a little bit about the Water Conservation Plan draft that we've put together. I will wait for it to get up on screen here. I am going to go through things fairly quickly just in the interest of time. I know that the packet, your agenda packet, did include the full plan with lots of detail, and certainly any questions you have about that specifically, I'm happy to answer. So my name is Mary Verdin. I'm the President and Chief Strategy Officer for Verdin Marketing. I've been in the marketing field for over 23 years, and actually coincidentally, one of the very first programs I ever worked on was public education on water conservation, so I feel like I've kind of come full circle here. I brought with me Ashley Akers, who is my Vice President of Client Services, and she manages our account staff. So Verdin is a full-service agency. We're based in San Luis Obispo, but we do work countywide. We have all of our services in-house, and the services include everything from strategic planning and development to creative development and placement of those messages. So we have just a snapshot of some of the clients that we work with. This just shows you some of the diversity, I guess, that we work with a lot of governmental agencies and municipalities, as well as nonprofit organizations and private businesses. So just real quickly, just to touch on some of the relevant experience we have in terms of water conservation and also behavioral marketing. I actually started working with the City of San Luis Utilities Department back in the 90s when they were experiencing that drought. And we came up with these characters, Lester and Lorenzo Flo, we called Less and Low Flo, and it was really to promote their retrofit rebate program. That was a big focus at that time for them. And we were able to really see some tangible results in that education program. At that time, the water usage per person per day in San Luis was 180 gallons, really high. They actually got down to about 86 gallons per person per day. And the nice thing, you know, in looking at what the residual benefits are and really helping people change habits, today they're still about 20% below what the state average is. They're at about 108 gallons per person per day. We still do work with the utilities department. We handle all of their public outreach and social media and their marketing. We were named the communications firm to work on the Los Osos Wastewater Project. Worked with them for about 2.5 years as the community liaison, getting that information out to the public and being available to answer questions and direct people for more information. That is just wrapping up on our part at this point, but we were then asked to do the retrofit rebate program for the county in Los Osos because they do have a mandate as well for water conservation, so we're now working on that piece. We do a lot of work for the San Luis Obispo Sheriff's Office. Recently, we did we're working on some PSAs for public safety. Sheriff Parkinson wants San Luis County to be the safest county in the nation. And we worked on a series of PSAs launched by a more serious message PSA saying that these will be coming and for people to stay tuned and pay attention. They featured the sheriff as well as all the mayors from all the cities in the county. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for participating in that. And then we're followed up with more humorous approach. You know, we found that humor is a really great way to catch people's attention and make a message stick. And so we went with the zombie apocalypse and all these things. The great thing is we don't have the hard numbers yet, but anecdotally, we have been told from the sheriff's office that they have increased the number of calls to 211, which was one of the real big pushes for this campaign, and they are attributing that to the outreach effort that we're doing. So the water conservation outreach program draft, the goals of that program are to educate the community and raise awareness about water conservation, to engage with residents, businesses, and visitors, and encourage best practices to create new habits with regards to water conservation, and that's that residual benefit that we talked about that we want years to come, that people are just changing how they look at water. And then to reduce water use by 10 gallons per person per day, there's something, we're trying to come up with something very tangible, so it's not just conserve water, that people feel like they can have a personal, there's something I can do that's going to make a difference, and 10 gallons per person per day is what we're looking at. We will start with doing some initial research. We want to gather information from stakeholders. We'll be getting information from city council and city staff, as well as local businesses. We'd like to do an online community survey. We really want to gauge awareness of where people are today in water conservation, what they know, how difficult do they feel like it's going to be, what kind of changes are they willing to make, so that we have a baseline and we can really see how the needle moved. Can you go back one? We are talking about possibly doing a telephone survey. This would enable us to get some statistically significant data. The cost of a telephone survey can be fairly high, so it's something that we'll look at doing, you know, maybe if we get those other partners, Oceano and Grover Beach, if they come on board, it might be something that makes a little more sense to do that. And then, of course, we'll be reviewing the water usage and determining goals and metrics. We're really big believers in strategy and making sure that we understand what success means. And so really making sure we have something in place that we're able to track that and report back, not just the city staff, but to the council as well on how that program is tracking. The communications tactics we'll be using, we'll do some brand development. We'll come up with a name for this program. We want it to be something that people remember. Water conservation program is a little dry, so to speak, so something a little more fun than that. We'll come up with a logo for that and some messaging around that. We want people that anytime there is outreach around the program, they immediately recognize it because of that consistency. We will look at developing a website, and we'll look at two options on that. One would be creating an actual separate website with its own domain name, there would be a lot of general information about water conservation and anything that is similar. I know AG and PISMO have a lot of things that are similar in terms of the messaging. If Oceano and Grover come on board, their programs might be a little bit different. So anything that's consistent, we would have on that website. And then we would have links off to the city's specific information so that if I live in one city and you live in another, I can get the specific information that I need. The other option would be to actually, within the city's own website, create a branded landing page. And so each city would have on their own website a branded landing page. And really the decision on which way we go on that is, again, we want to look at what we're trying to accomplish with the website and how many partners are going to end up being in that effort. Social media is going to be a big thing in this. We've had some real success with the San Luis Utilities Department on Facebook. It was something they started as really kind of a trial. Let's see if people will really pay attention. We're closing in on about 2,000 fans on that page, which has blown everybody away. I thought, why does anybody care? You know, what we're saying on this page, we're the utilities department. But people have really been engaging, and I think we found a really good strategy to make that information relevant to people. Facebook is great because it's free to start a page, and we can post as much as we want, and as long as we're posting the kind of content people want and find useful, that can be really successful. So can you go back? We'll post daily on that. To engage the audience, we have what we call the 70-20-10 rule, which is kind of a tried-and-true approach to Facebook that we use. The 70% of the information that we put on there needs to be fun and engaging and stuff people want to share. 20% is more tips and helpful information. 10% is straight promotional. You know, retrofit, rebate, here's the information, the real promotional stuff. We talked about designating different days so we could have we have Tuesday tips or waterless Wednesdays where it's this kind of theme that happens and people start expecting, hey, what's the tip going to be today? It's Tuesday. That's a fun way to engage people. Promoting photos, videos, finding existing information we can curate and put on that page. The videos that are going to be produced around this, that would be a great way to promote those and get additional use out of them rather than, you know, having them on Channel 20, but finding other ways to promote those as well. And then we've looked, and Facebook reports about 26,000 people on Facebook over age 25 in Arroyo Grande and Pismo Beach areas. Now, that's by zip code, so it is going to be outside of the city limits to some extent, but it just shows you the number of people just in this small area that are using social media. On Twitter, we would be using hashtags. Hashtags are a way for people to search for information. So something like Save Water 5 Cities, we would promote tweets, which means we send out our 140-character messages. We can promote them. You pay, you know, $5, very inexpensive, and that message will stay out there longer. More people will see that. Follow other water conservation pages so we can go onto the state pages or other pages that we find relevant and make sure we're retweeting that information other people are posting. And then Instagram is a photo sharing platform. And so using Instagram, again, with that hashtag so people can search and find that information, have photos posted about saving water and water conservation, but then using that also for contests. And these are contests that we can promote over Facebook and Twitter that draw people in for them to participate. Because that's really what social media is all about, is that two-way conversation, getting people to post pictures to it rather than us doing all the posting. And the idea we had for the first contest would be I can barely read my own thing.
5 extra minutes.
Thank you. 5 extra minutes. And the idea behind the 5 extra minutes is a simple request of, hey, take five minutes off of your daily shower and do something else with that 5 minutes. You know, go grab a cup of coffee and enjoy the nice weather outside. And then what we would do is ask people to post a photo of what they did with their extra 5 minutes that they found that day. So it's just a fun, engaging way to ask people to take a shorter shower. On the public relations side, for Community Pledge, a lot of research has been done when you do a community-based social marketing program of having people say, yes, I will do this. So that idea of having a water conservation pledge that people say, and in this, as specific as we can make it, is I pledge to try to take 10 gallons a day off of my water usage or something like that. And really playing up on the public relations potential of that, getting the media involved and having the council do it first, the city staff, having the businesses do it, and then actually having an online pledge that people could electronically sign as part of that campaign. For the business outreach, Steve mentioned the hotels.
There's a big movement towards stewardship travel, and people are starting to take a little more care of the places that they go and enjoy. So this would be something just working with the BIDs and the VCB to make sure that we're getting information to the hotels that do tell them not to, you know, have their towels washed in new towels every day and those kinds of messages, helping with the outreach to the restaurants who are having these people come in, as well as the Chambers of Commerce. That helps with the visitors, but also just local businesses. They offer a channel to get that information out. Certainly any local businesses that have a direct connection to water conservation, like nurseries or hardware stores, making sure they have information, you know, asking minors to put a little slip in every bag when they sell something that says, hey, five tips to save 5 gallons or something like that. And then we talked about having a mailer that would go out to businesses, possibly using the chamber to do that in a real cost-effective way. Just, again, you want to hit people in a lot of different ways so they start seeing those messages and start paying attention. Media and public relations, you know, launching this effort with close contact with the media, making sure that they're paying attention, making sure that we're getting them updates if we have milestones or if we have special stories, you know, somebody does something unique with water conservation, that we're finding a way to get the press on that. So the community is seeing, well, a lot of people are starting to pay attention to this water conservation. It's a way to support my community. I want to do that too. And then just having a regularly scheduled press release calendar where we're saying, okay, every time when we start, hit a milestone or every couple of months, we want to have something that we're able to tell the press so that they see an ongoing effort in this area. We want to collaborate with the groups that are already out there, groups like Aurora Grande and Bloom and the Village Improvement Group. They have a dedicated audience that is going to listen to their message, so finding ways that we're giving the kind of information they need and their members are going to want, using their ability to reach out to those members. Billing inserts, really easy way to send something out to the people who are using the water. And just having a regular thing with that, with tips. Cable channel 20, you're going to have the videos on there. Maybe also having just a static slide. We've done this a number of times for other cities in the county that direct people to the website. Get more information about conservation by going here. Like us on Facebook to get ongoing tips. Direct mail postcards, same thing. Something out to the community that tells them to start paying attention. And then there's so many events that happen already. Tying into those events, making sure that we have a presence there. Depending on the level of involvement from these other communities, maybe even having our own event that would be, a conservation fair, could have drought-tolerant landscaping workshops, a demonstration garden, those types of things. Another thing we'd like to do is called installation marketing, and this is where you find a high-traffic area and you find something really attention-getting, and you stick it on that corner. And so this is an example out of Denver. They do a lot of really cutting-edge things on the water conservation side. So on the left, a woman walking her dog. The giant hydrant shows, on average, how much water someone uses to water their lawn. The small hydrant is how much they actually need. So it's just a visual. You get it in just a second by looking at it. And the picture on the right are barrels that signify how much water is wasted by one toilet that's left running for a month. It's just running in the background. And it, again, really gives you a visual. We talked about having something in the village where we have a lot of walking traffic and cars. In Pismo, we talked about maybe we could do something with a clam. There's something that people are going to take notice of. On the paid advertising side, we are looking a little bit at traditional media, but because we want to be so focused in on this geographic area, there's not going to be a lot we're going to do in that area, but there is some print and radio that is localized that we can use. Certainly the digital side, Google AdWords, Facebook ads, Pandora Radio is really gaining a lot of traction, particularly with businesses. We can target all of those by zip code. So saying we want to be in this area, that's the only place those ads are going to run, really inexpensive. And then the theater screen advertising is a really great way to reach people. They're a captive audience. They're sitting there waiting for that movie to start. We can even do something fun that, you know, in the 15 minutes you've been waiting for this movie to start, if a faucet was running that long, you would have wasted 20 gallons of water, something like that that ties it in. And then I mentioned earlier that we're very tied to strategy, so knowing what those metrics are, knowing what the measures for success are, we would be doing ongoing assessment of how the program was tracking,
looking at, you know, reporting, making recommendations if something wasn't polling as much as we thought it should, making recommendations for how that should be changed, and refining and enhancing that program to be successful. I know that's really hard to read. Sorry about that. This is the budget sheet from the packet that you got, and there are a lot of ranges on different things. The first column just says what the item is, the tactic, whether it's the website development.
We have this information.
Yes.
You know, so I don't think you have to detail every line item.
Okay,
so.
That's good because it's too hard to see. But, yes, if you have questions on any of the budget, let me know. And that's everything.
Steve.
Thanks, Mayor Farrar. I just wanted to add a couple points, particularly since we're wrapping up and talking about the finances. Well, first of all, I wanted to mention that we have worked with Mary's firm in the past, and they've done a great job. And then the selection this time, as I mentioned, was by a panel, and the city of Pismo Beach also participated in that panel. So it was a joint selection between the two agencies that are going to originally be partnering in this program. As far as funding, just mainly for the benefit of the public to make sure they realize the funding that's being proposed for this program is funding that's restricted for either water conservation efforts or measures to secure or protect or bring in additional water supply. So it's not general fund money. This money doesn't take anything from any other ongoing programs. It's restricted for this exact purpose. We know funding's a concern of the council, and so what we're recommending this evening is just approving the first year funding. And that would give us the opportunity to come back after the first year, see how effective it was, you know, see what level. We think as we go along, we need an ongoing program, but probably we can cut it back a little bit as we go along. So we're just looking for the first year this year, and then we'll have an evaluation period after that first year. And then the last thing I just want to say is we're just all the jurisdictions working on this are trying to emphasize that this is, we think, the most important issue we're facing right now. The potential of, if the drought continues, of experiencing seawater intrusion to our groundwater table is going to be devastating. And as you know, the council was amazing as far as approving at the June meeting a really extensive program of different measures, but a lot of those efforts are going to take a while. And so things like this are probably the most effective things that we can get in place right away and start seeing results right away. And so that's one of the reasons we're pushing this so hard, because we just think it's critical to the community right now. With that, if you have questions for Mary.
All right. Do you have questions? Okay. Go ahead.
Rather than just anecdotal evidence, do you have any actual empirical evidence that marketing helps people save the water that you anticipate that they'll save?
Well, I think that looking at San Luis, it is empirical. We had, so they were down to about 86 gallons per person after all the outreach efforts started. So they had been at 180 gallons per person per day in the mid to late 90s. By 91, they were down to 86. And that has slowly gone up, but I think they haven't actively promoted water conservation for close to 10 years, and we're still at 108 gallons per person per day. Rio Grande is now, I believe, at 159 gallons per person today. So it gives you some scale in terms of the amount people are still conserving down there.
And then the other question is, and I think the mayor brought this up earlier, as did I, the cost is kind of surprising to me. So in this age of social media and the fact that we send water bills out and we send out newsletters and we have different ways of communication, you mentioned Facebook, there's a whole myriad of things. Once this is set up, why would it be so expensive going forward? It seems to me that once it's set up, it should be something that could be staff-driven almost at some point.
The interesting thing about social media is that the more successful it is, the more time it takes, because you have to be monitoring it on a regular basis. We actually have a great, the way we monitor pages with a lot of our clients, including the City of San Luis Utilities Department, is we share that responsibility. So we actually create the calendars of what's going to be posted, because that's our expertise, messaging. And then we share. Some days they post the information, some days we do. But we are constantly monitoring and being able to respond to people. We've actually had, they had a water main break a couple of months. In fact, it was Memorial Day weekend. So I got a call when I was shopping on Memorial Day weekend that they had a water main break, and somebody had posted a question on their Facebook page, And it was my employee that was monitoring that because everybody was closed at the city. And so it's that ability to respond quickly. So the more people are using that and engaging, the more you have to be there. So it takes a lot of time. And I think from a staff perspective, if there's somebody at the city who had the time and the expertise that we could bring on board, we're certainly happy to do that. But it's you don't want to set it up and then let it go that nobody's interacting because you're going to lose all of that you've built up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Kristen, do you have a question?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In the staff report, you reference the two different choices of a separate website versus having a tab on the city website. And there's a cost savings, obviously, if we put the information on the city website. What do you think the cost savings would be? And do you think it's a lot more effective when it is on a separate website? And why is that?
You know, I like the idea of having a separate website from a marketing messaging perspective. We can, whatever the program name is, we can make the domain name of that site, so that makes it a lot easier for people to find. The other nice thing about it, we do work for a number of cities in the county, the Central Coast Partners for Water Quality, which is stormwater pollution prevention, and we have a separate site set up for that so that we can have stopdirtywater.org as the URL in the PSAs. People know to go to that website, and then it directs them to, oh, I need to go to Aurora Grande, or I need to go to San Luis or Paso. So it's an easier way to make sure people are going to be able to find the page. Mm-hmm. And it could be more or it could be less. It really depends on setting up that city page, mm-hmm. what our level of involvement would be, or if the IT person at the city could handle that. So, yeah, it's probably pretty close.
Steve, yes. Yeah, and Kristen had brought that question up earlier, so I did have a chance to talk to our legislative and information services director who handles the whole website. And it probably would be a little difficult for us. It would probably, doing it on our own website might come out costing more because we really don't have the staff dedicated. Kelly's doing an amazing job with the implementation of the existing website and implementing all the components and modules of that. But to go beyond that, we're a little concerned we're not staffed. I don't know if you want to add something to that, Kelly.
The only thing I would add to that, though, is the ability, without getting into a lot of technical terms, that the city could create a page within our own website that, in effect, looks like you're on our website, but it redirects to this website.
That says you're now leaving this website, sort of like the water bill? Or
yeah, and it can kind of be integrated into our website, so that would be something mm-hmm. that we could work with. The consultant.
Okay. Yeah. I have questions for staff. If you want to go through those, I'm done with Verdin.
I'm sorry?
I'm done with Verdin Marketing. I just have questions for staff.
Well, go ahead and ask.
Okay.
Yeah.
Steve, the two different, and I talked to you about this earlier, the two different stages, when we're talking about the neither of those stages has anything to do with outside watering, because I know there's communities that are saying you can't water outside at all. And so my issue with that was if you have a couple that's being being really conscious of the water they're using, and they're actually conserving inside their home just so they can water outside their home if something's, you know, really important to them. So we're not proposing with either of these two stages. If you want to conserve inside, it's okay if you're using it outside for either one of those, if it's the historical use or the allocation. Is that correct?
Correct. Other than commercial under stage two, we would
right.
be prohibiting all outside water use for commercial under stage two. But that is one of the key flaws in the current code, where the only additional measure we have now is then when the city suddenly reaches 100% of its water supply, mm-hmm. then the only measure instituted is nobody can use any outside water. And so we wanted to make that more flexible and base it on the actual allocation of water, which directly relates back to the projected water supply we need. Going by outside water use, it would also be much more difficult to enforce. If we just say everybody's, you know, allotted this much water, we can regulate that through, you know, the billing cycle. And we had the same discussion. There may be, under stage two, keep in mind that the water is set at the basic public health and safety amount. So mm-hmm. in practically speaking, there's going to be very little water available to do much landscaping. But there may be somebody that has done a great job in putting nothing but drought-tolerant plants in that only need to be watered once or 2 months. And so there'd be, it seems silly to prohibit them from keeping those alive when they take almost no water. So we wanted to really focus on just the water amount that was needed to save and let households determine how they're going to use that water.
Okay, and then my other question is, when you talk about the three different tiers, and we talk about, I think it was the stage one, if you have a couple that is using a minimal amount of water 1 year, and then next year we go into the historical allocation, and you have another family that's been wasting water, and then we go into the historical allocation. Obviously, that family is going to have a lot more water to use, yet, and I know you talked about this in your staff report, and the people that have already been conserving are going to have even less or be penalized. So we talked in the staff report, or you did, about the percentages. Maybe the people that were in tier one, they only have to save 5%, whereas the people in tier three would have to save 15. We can tweak those numbers a little bit because I feel like it needs to be a larger span between those percentages.
Yeah, what we hope to design is an ordinance that sets forth the basic structure of how the restrictions are going to work,
right.
And then when it comes time that we have to implement something, it would be done by resolution. And it would be kind of fill in the blanks. At the time it came up, we would do an analysis on what is our water supply deficiency to meet demand. And so we'd do a pretty sophisticated analysis and determine how that fits in. And it would be, so it'll be totally up to the discretion of the council on, you know, how much you want to escalate tier one, tier two, tier three. That was just an example I plugged in there so you could understand how it would work.
Okay. Let's see.
Mary, if you want to grab a chair, I think maybe the rest of our questions are for staff.
All right. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem has one question for you, but it'll be a while before he asks it.
The restaurants, the no water, water served only on request. I assume that's something that we're implementing right away, and that a letter will be sent out to the restaurant. That's how they'll know.
Yes, we're proposing that be, when we do the ordinance, that would be implemented right away as part of the first measure, and we would notify them right away, along with the changes to the hotels.
Okay. And now, this is sort of a loaded question. I don't know if it's for Jeff, but If we consider the rainfall or the lack of rainfall, if we were to continue with that same trend for the next year or two, when would you envision we'd have to enact stage one? Jeff, can you answer that? Do you want to answer that?
Jeff English, Public Works Director. Currently, we are working with the significant issue regarding rainfall, obviously, is Lopez and the amount of water available in the Lopez Reservoir. We're currently above the 49% of capacity, which we're still in pretty good shape. Mm-hmm. We're working with county staff now on a low reservoir response plan. Right now, currently, the trigger is 20,000 acre feet. We don't project that we would trigger that low response plan this year. It's measured at April 1st. However, if we don't get any rain this year, we do anticipate that next year that we would trigger that first reduction in distribution of water from Lopez. In the first year, we're actually working on a plan that's going to come before you within the next few months. The first year of that plan, we would preserve our allocation. So we're at least 2 years away, we believe, from any kind of reduced delivery to municipalities. If we go into a third year, then we do anticipate that there will be some reductions, and we're anticipating that could be a 10 to a 20% reduction based on whatever model it comes out of that planning process. So we're really looking at the most 2 years, that if there was no rain, we would then have some adverse impacts on our deliveries.
Okay. Hopefully that answers my question. Yep. Thank you, Jeff. Those are all my questions, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Very good. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have one question for staff, and it goes back to the first page of the staff report. We're talking about the cost to do this program on a yearly basis, and then we talk about the getting beyond the second year, reducing ongoing costs to a certain amount. How long do we anticipate that that program would need to continue? Would this be a perpetual process, or is there a 5-year, 10-year plan on this?
Well, we do. Our original plan was, I think, 5.5 years to meet the state goal requirements for reductions. I think that's 2020. So it's designed around, I think it was a 5.5-year period. However, we do see to some degree it being an ongoing program because, once again, we're considering this as part of the measures to get the reductions necessary to meet our long-term water supply need. And so we'll need some continuing effort to continue to maintain that so people don't start increasing water usage again.
Yes, our proposed program is a 5.5-year program, and this really is in anticipation of meeting that 2020 goal. Back in the year 2000, the state implemented a 2020 goal of reducing water use by 20%. Our goal is 149 gallons per capita. We're currently at 164. We're on a downward trend, but in order to get there, we have to implement all these programs, and we're looking at a 5.5-year program to get there. So.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah, I'll start with a question on staff on the ordinance. And I guess I hear you saying that you would do a more sophisticated study the day that we actually implement this ordinance, but have you guys scenarioed it out to see whether it's really, I'm going to say functional, whether it would really sort of, you know, if say tomorrow we had to do a 20, we decided to do this at 25%, are there enough big users, you know, or is every, you know, it's kind of like when we did the trash analysis, as it turned out there were so many people in the small trash cans already that going to a smaller one wouldn't have actually made much difference. So I'm wondering if you guys have scenarioed this out at all to see. I understand you did an example that's just really to show how it functions, but I'm wondering how it would actually work out if you guys have done that at all.
Yeah, we did some basic assumptions. There's going to be a lot of work to do beyond drafting the ordinance. Then we need to set up how it would be implemented in the finance department as far as billing, and that's going to be pretty labor intensive. But what you're saying is we would be setting up for both methodologies, we'd be setting up some, I was going to say, pretty sophisticated spreadsheets for the finance staff. I mean, they seem sophisticated to me. I'm not sure they'd be all that sophisticated for our finance staff. But setting those up so that we can make some assumptions on how many accounts are four or less people and how many are more than four. And so we could determine exactly, under different assumptions, what percentage that overall savings is going to add up to. Because if one group is required to save 15% and the other's 10 and the other's 5, we're going to determine how many accounts are each in that group, and then what does that add up to. But I think we can do that through some spreadsheets, and I don't think that's too complicated. It'll take some initial work just putting the data together, but I don't think it's all that complicated developing the spreadsheet and having that ready to go.
Okay, yeah, because there's something of a comment, but I guess I'd almost like to see that when we're at least one scenario of that when we're actually enacting the ordinance. I understand the number of people. One, to me, that's I guess when you consider how there are few people there are per household on average in Arroyo Grande, there's not going to be a lot of 5 to 7. People households to work with. I'm really thinking about the other one, the one that is based on percentages. How many people are in the tier two and how many people are in tier one and how many people would fall into tier three or whatever to see whether this is really functional or is everybody already in tier one or two and we're all going to be looking at essentially the same reduction.
Yeah, I mean, It would definitely modify how you need to structure those rates. So it may not just be 5%, 10%, 15%. It could be 5%, 10%, 30% or something, if that upper group, has a small amount. So I don't really think it's necessary to have that all worked out for the ordinance, because in the end, we're going to have a target figure we have to get to. And this seems like the best methodology of implementing this. But as far as the specific reductions that we apply to different groups, once we have the spreadsheet in place, we'll have to kind of develop some scenarios and run by you to see what you think's most fair to get to that final figure. But I mean, one way or another, it's gonna work, because we have to get to a certain water level at that point.
Well, I understand that, but I guess what I would want to know before we enacted that methodology was how it would really function, because I do have some concerns about how many people are in the upper tiers already, that we would then hope to do anything but really be, have maybe a 5% difference between, because there's so many people in the smaller, so many people in the smaller tiers.
We could bring back a couple scenarios, and we need to get started on it right away anyway, so... Okay. It might not be the exact scenario we would propose, but we can get something so you can see pretty close to, how it could work, if that's what you're looking for. Okay.
And then, now, there's a little thrown by one number in there. Now, it is in the phase two analysis, where you're actually talking about, really serious water conservation at 50 gallons per person. Mm-hmm. But your top group doesn't fit a family of seven. It's not 350 gallons per day. It's like 250 or something. So I'm wondering, I understand how difficult it would be to determine exactly how many people are in a household, although I assume this would actually be done with some sort of assumption, and people could then would probably have to appeal their position rather than us go out and count people in their house.
That's another good policy decision. We're looking for direction on it. How many meetings did we meet on this? We had a lot of meetings on this, trying to work this out, because it's just hard to get it perfectly fair. And that's one of the key issues, is the most fair methodology would be to set it up, by people in, per capita in household. And some very small jurisdictions we found did that, but we determined it just would really be infeasible to set it up so that we had to calculate every single household, how many people. And that's why we thought three categories would be realistic in terms of what staff could do, and kind of divide them into those three categories. So there's the households, four and under, and over four and over seven. But we're open to suggestions, other ways to structure it. Just keep in mind, the more and more detail we get, it's going to be a challenging thing to implement in a short period of time for staff. So we were trying to balance the feasibility of implementation and fairness.
Can I ask one follow-up on the number of people? Is that okay? Well, so...
Are you done?
I have some questions for...
What you were just saying, what Jim asked you about, it would be hard to determine some jurisdictions that are smaller, determine how many people are in each house, and then they allocate so much water per person. You had recommended we're not going to do that, but how are we going to figure out if it's 1 to 4, 5 to 7, how are we going to determine how many of those, the groups of people are in that home?
The basic assumption would be everybody would be 1 to 4. So anybody above 4 would need to come in and apply.
Okay.
And be able to bring in some, I don't know whether it's a tax return or something, but be able to prove that the number of people that are living in the home, and then above 7 the same thing.
Okay. So that would be initiated by the customer. Yeah.
Now, that's one of the nice things about the stage one historical use allocation, is that the same household is just being compared to what they used the year before. Right. So you don't have to get into all that stuff, okay, because it's the same people using the water last year, and so there's not a lot of exceptions. So that was one of the advantages, cutting down the exceptions on that other alternative.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, thank you, Jim.
Yeah, I had a couple questions. My first question is on the budget and in the initial budget on this is page 20 of 10A, and it's not the one you put up, but the one that shows the
just the summary. Oh, the more in depth.
And you had mentioned, for instance, the telephone survey was optional, but it's actually included here. In fact, it's one of the biggest numbers in here, and it's included in this first $130,000.
Well, it's actually the research line should show, I think the low end is $3,000 or $3,500. Well, I don't have that page.
The telephone survey shows $18,000 to $30,000. There's okay. The branding is $3,000, but
right. That was intended to give a lot more detail on each budget item. The way I did the total, and I have some notes on there. Hopefully, they're clear. That if we did the low end or the high end on each of those, it would far exceed the $130,000 budget that we would have to be picking and choosing. And so, it's not that we have to do the telephone survey. If we take it out completely, and the low end's $18,000, that gives us $18,000 to do some of those other items to a larger extent. I was just trying to find a way to include, because we had talked when I had an intake session with the staff a couple of weeks ago to talk about what should be included in the budget for the plan. The telephone survey was something that they did want to explore further, so I wanted to include those costs in there, but try to do it in such a way that we could, if we decided not to do it at all, we had other ways that we could effectively spend that money. Does that make sense?
Okay, so the low end, the $130,000 isn't the average of all of these.
So I have a little note at the bottom there that we would manage the budget not to exceed $130,000. As we better define the actual tactics we're going to do, we would provide, here's the final budget on each item.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Well, I understood the note. I just didn't understand quite how we were then supposed to evaluate the different pieces. The other question I have has to do with when we include the other two communities, which is less than half of what Pismo and Arroyo Grande. I'm wondering, I don't know if there's a question for you or for Steve, what when we say that they're going to use just pieces of it, we're developing most of it in the first half. Are they going to then use those pieces? Are they the same piece that you develop, in the first half? They would be using just on a, call it a piece rate in on their side?
Yeah, some of that would be, say, for the website, for example, if we did do a standalone website, was not connected to the city's websites, that would be developed for Aurora Grande and Pismo. If Grover and Oceano came in and they did have different information, it would be incorporating their information, sending those links back to their sites, making sure that information is on their sites. On the other option, if we did create landing pages on each of the city's own websites, it would be helping them create that same landing page on their website that was created for the other communities already. I think the reality of the situation is, even if only Aurora Grande and Pismo do the program, all of the five cities is going to benefit. I think that's a great thing, but we can target as much as we can target, and digital does allow us to do that to a very great extent, but there is going to still be some, with businesses and things, there's going to be some spillover. So I think adding those two communities is a way to get them to share into that benefit that they are going to get. Okay. But it does allow us to then extend that program a little further and do a few more things.
Okay. And the last question I have to do has to do with timing here, sort of milestones. We actually have quite a bit of...
Jim, hang on just a second. I did not mean to mislead you here on the time. I've seen you guys standing in the back now for quite a while. There's plenty of empty seats if you're getting a little bit leg weary. So please feel free to grab a chair. I didn't think there would be any movement, but I thought I'd try. Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So has to do with the time. We actually have a lot of fulfillment in here, as well as a lot of research. When you say a year, are we talking about doing at least some of the fulfillment? We've got the plan together by summer.
Easily. I mean, we can do a lot of the things can happen concurrently. We can be doing some of the research at the same time we're developing some of those materials. Some of the messaging is going to need to come from the research, so there's probably going to be a parallel track to some extent, and then we might have to wait till we get all the data. The telephone survey would take a little longer period of time to do, so that would delay things a little bit, but I think within 2-3 months we can have things going. I mean, I anticipate that into winter, we're going to have something out there. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Steve, I had a couple of questions, just quick questions on strategy and mitigation strategy. One relates to the commercial side of the ordinance. The other one relates to perhaps a municipal strategy, and it's more of a question regarding past practice. I know that, you know, the water situation, the supply issue is much more severe in other places of the county, specifically Cambria. And having been through there, oh, I think about a month and a half, 2 months ago, and going into a restaurant, one thing became very clear very soon, and that was they had shut down their restrooms. And they were using, I think they were using porta potties out in the parking lot, but they'd shut down their restaurant and or restrooms, and then they had also turned off the water, and they were not issuing water at all, even by request. If you wanted water in the restaurant, you had to buy a bottle of water. So I know their situation is much, much worse than ours, but I guess my question is simply, is our restaurant strategy on the commercial side sufficient simply by not serving water upon request? Is it likely this time next year to get to that point where, you know, we may have a strategy that looks something similar to what Cambria has now? Anyway, just something to consider that we may have to pull that trigger at some point if you know, things don't change. And then the other issue relates to historical strategies that we've used, and I hate to use the awful M word, but I recall several years back when we were going through a drought that was not as severe as this one, that we looked at a temporary moratorium on development. And I think the way that we approached it was that if there were building permits in the queue, if there were projects in the queue that were moving forward, those were sort of grandfathered. But any new permits that came through were temporarily halted until our water table, our water basin was in better shape and Lopez was in better shape. Do we anticipate anything like that?
I think that's an excellent point that we did not discuss, but I think it makes sense when we get to these emergency stages that should be an additional component. I mean, I want to go back and talk to staff because we have a whole committee working on that, and maybe there's some things I'm not thinking of, but I'd like to go back and review that with them. I think it probably should be another component that we could add into the overall efforts.
It was a couple of years later, I think it was 95, 96, that we got all the rain we ever needed, and everything filled back up, the groundwater basin recharged, and we were okay. But it wasn't until that happened that that we lifted the temporary moratorium. So
that's a good point.
Okay. All right. This is not a public hearing, but obviously a matter that affects the entire community. And if there's anyone in the audience who would like to come forward and comment on this, once again, 3 minutes or less.
With the risk of prolonging this matter any further, I'll make it brief. My name is Barbara Harmon. I reside at 216 South Mason Street. Good evening, Mr. Mayor, council members, and city staff. I'd really like to address the Water Conservation Public Education Program component. I understand and support the need for the consultant's expertise in the event it becomes necessary to activate a Stage 1 or Stage 2 emergency. However, given the $70,000 allocation in regards to the Water Conservation Public Education Program, I did not find any outcome measures indicated for each of the primary components. If these components are implemented, how much water would actually be saved or conserved? What is the targeted goal or percentage of water reduction to be achieved for each of these components? And are these components proven to be successful at meeting these goals? Also, the staff report indicates some impact to staff to coordinate the program. How is this impact defined? In terms of hours, number of staff, or is it in an accommodation for any increased workload? Therefore, I offer the following suggestions. Incorporate outcome measures and goals for each component of the education program. In all water-saving tips, include the actual quantity of water saved. Conservation efforts may be realized if people knew reducing their shower by 5 minutes equates to approximately 20 to 40 gallons in water savings. Or for a family of four, that maximum amount could be as much as 160 gallons. And lastly, specify the amount of impact to staff. Thank you for this opportunity to being heard.
Thank you for your comments. Come right up.
Hi, Mary Lucy. I want to thank you for hearing me out today. I sit on the Oceana Community Services District. I sit on the Water Resource Advisory Committee for the San Luis Obispo County and Northern Cities Management and Zone 3. So I would like to piggyback on President Ferraro's comment regarding will serve. As we enter into this extremely severe drought, I didn't know if anybody had noticed the NASA website today. Folsom Lake has disappeared. It's gone. And that's right outside Sacramento, so you can catch that on the NASA website. I think social media is an excellent, brilliant idea, although I didn't hear how many acre feet would be saved by that social media and how many acre feet could be bought with the $170,000 put into social media. As we start moving through society, less and less opportunities for developing our water portfolios, which sustains our growth for the future, is becoming less and less. And so we have to get more and more creative. And the more and more creative we get, the more costly it gets. And so it will cost all of our homes if we do not invest in the future. So if we don't have water, we can't live here. I don't know anybody who can drink a dollar. So I'd like to suggest that you, one, consider how much the social media is going to save you in water, because I have to look at municipalities, not so much residential usage, as the main, the most thirsty of us all because of the development and putting more, and the lack of putting moratoriums on will serve and more and more and more development. We can't take care of the people we have now. Let's take care of the residents now, put a hold on future growth, and let's just hope things get better and those moratoriums can be lifted. So I'd like to offer the four solutions. They are costly, but our homes are very costly too. Everyone who pays a mortgage knows how expensive it is. First of all, we need a potable facility for processing potable water. And we are sending 5 million gallons of water out into the ocean every single day, because we're all partners in the San Luis Obispo Sanitation District, which is putting 5 million gallons out of fresh water out into the ocean a day. We don't capture surface water in a cost-effective way or in a usable way. That's another investment. Banking policies. Our policies around banking water, surface water, we have not come together and decided how we could properly do that. It really is... if it's thought out properly, it can be done relatively costly. And last but not least is the desal plants. And if anybody has been to Cabo San Lucas, you know exactly what we're living with when we go down the desal road. So with that, I would ask you to please, please, please invest in your water portfolios. Arroyo Grande has not had an opportunity to diversify nor add to their water portfolio in over 50 years. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Two questions. One is, what are you going to do about the people who have wells? And I have a well. I put out $22,000 to have one put in because mine went dry about maybe 6 years ago. So what are your plans?
You can pull that down. You don't have to stand.
What are your plans for wells? The other thing is, it's well and good to save water and conserve. But what have the cities done to create reservoirs? You know, you've been in a state that needs water all the time. There's always years there isn't any water or much water, much rain. Why haven't you developed more reservoirs, even bladder dams? And this lady before me was right in saving your water so it doesn't go to the ocean. And we don't want to save a fish and neglect our agriculture, as it's been done along the Sierra Nevadas. Stupid. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else?
Mr. Mayor.
Gail Lightfoot.
I'm sorry. Our last speaker. We didn't get your name for the record. Okay. Did you get that, Kelly? Okay, sorry.
Sharp ears, Kelly. Unlike me. I have a lot to say on the water issue, but I understand that'll be back before you at later dates.
Several.
On the proposal to do the education, I'm opposed. I believe we have an excellent way to educate our people, and that's through our water bills. My water bill breaks my budget because it comes in every 2 months. So it's not a monthly thing, and it's my highest utility. So I pay very close attention to it, and anything that comes with it, I pay close attention to. So I think before employing a fancy public relations firm and spending money to educate our public, we ought to find out through the water bills how much they know and how much they're trying to conserve already, and then consider a fancy educational program. You might find that what you're doing already is having success. It certainly has with me. I was born and raised in Southern California, except for the 7 years I spent in Kodiak, Alaska, where we got an average of 52 inches of rain a year at the time I was living there. And when I returned here, California was in the beginning of a very long drought. The first time I saw Southern California green, I was astonished. I'm extremely aware that this is the worst drought we've had, not its length, but its severity of practically no rainfall at all. And I know I'm politically aware and pretty much involved in those kinds of things, maybe more than others, but I think most residents here are very aware of the water problem, and if called upon, will do as much as they can without a whole lot of Facebook pages and so on to help them become more aware.
Okay, thank you.
Sue Schmandel, and I live in Arroyo Grande. I think we really should work on saving that $130,000 for something that we could do to create more savings for water. Also, there are lots of ways to go about using the same kind of techniques that this agency is proposing doing. I was on a city committee in a much larger city previously, and we had a litter program going, anti-litter. And we incorporated the use of the schools and had a contest for a logo design. So I think there are lots of ways we could do things like that. Like there are many very talented high school students and junior high school students who could contribute to something. I think we could also use lots of our service clubs for volunteers to help get this as a community, make this some type of community project to get the word out to their businesses and to the citizens in the committee. I just think there are a lot of ways that the money could be better used. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your comments.
Once again, I'm Laura Mordaunt. I live in San Luis Obispo. The reason I'm speaking is because I'm very frustrated at the obvious, and that is we need to capture water. And I was told at the Board of Supervisors it is illegal to capture more water. So I think that there has to be, at what point will the city council or the Board of Supervisors or the 7 city councils push back on that ruling? What does it have to take? Do you just squeeze the citizens?
or do you set in motion and say to the state of California that this is not right? Say it to the county. These are not correct rules for our citizens. We need to be able to capture more water. And the environmentalism that has put a chokehold on our ability to do that needs to change. At what severity and cost to your citizens does that have to happen? Where I have never heard anyone push back on that. And I think that's what you're elected to do, is to protect the citizenry. There is water. There's water in the ocean. There's plenty of water when it rains. It just runs off. And so without that approach, then we're looking at $130,000. I mean, you can spend money many ways. You can squeeze it and squeeze it, but you need to open it. Think differently. Bring water in. Allow us to capture it. You could make that statement. Join together with other cities to do that. And if you don't address that, then really, what are we talking about?
Okay, thank you for your comments.
Ron McAvoy, and I'm somewhat naive about agriculture. I'm a city boy, always have been. Are there any, and can I ask the question and get an answer maybe? Is there any agricultural properties that use city water for Arroyo Grande? And if so, I didn't hear anything about, and it's very, if we get to a point where we can't water lawns, we can't do this, we can't do that, and they're going to shut things off and fine you, and then it would be very severe. But I didn't hear anything about if there's agricultural property that is using city water, are there going to be any cutbacks for them in everything that I heard tonight? And again, you know, we need food, and that water does provide us with food, but I don't know, because I'm not a farmer or anything else like that, so I don't know anything about cutbacks. That's all.
Okay, thank you.
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. One of the things I'd noticed is that if I went out and bought a high-efficiency washing machine for my clothes, I could go to Raffoni's or I could go to Kmart, and you guys offered a rebate on it. How about that you offer X amount if we buy it within the city, but you also offer a little less of a rebate, but still a rebate, if I go up to my Costco or something and buy it? You need to encourage people to go with the high efficiencies, and maybe a rebate of a little less money if we don't get the sales tax, so be it. We're saving water. So just another suggestion on how to save some water.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else, we'll close public comment on this item, and we'll bring this back to the council. We have several potential ways to go in the staff report. And why don't we start with Councilmember Costello?
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to address a couple of things that some people have brought up. One of the issues that we're trying to develop, and I've been sounding this for a number of years myself, is trying to reuse the water that's coming out of the outflow from a sanitation district. And I think it was about 2 months ago we took some initial steps to do a formal study needs to be done before we can do that. So I do want to say that we are taking steps to try to develop additional water sources. We've been talking about water and expanding our sources here for 5 or 6 years and studying it. So we are definitely looking to do that even before the drought began. I think that we are in a situation where we do need to try to encourage people to start saving water. I'm a little concerned about the perpetual type aspect of the program. I think we've seen that when the program is in place for a while, as was brought up by the savings down in Santa Barbara and in San Luis, people will start using less water. They won't go back to the previous levels. They will not necessarily stay at the lowest level, but they will continue to save water. So I think that we are going to need to go forward with some sort of a program that will accomplish this and educate people to do that. I think there are a lot of tools out there that were brought forward by the consultant to be looked at, and I think that we should continue to look at those. Personally, in terms of the issue of the household allocation methodology or the historical use methodology, something I've talked about in the past is if people have been successful in the past few years in saving water and bringing their usage down to a lower level, they may not have any room left to save much more. So whatever system we bring forward through time here is going to have some sort of an appeals process in it where the consumer can come forward and show us, that, hey, for the past 3 years, I've gradually reduced my water usage, or I reduced it and I've got it down to a level where I can't get much lower. And that is considered. I think I do like the hybrid or some form of a hybrid methodology that would be beneficial to us. We do need to consider the commercial users. Had some great suggestions this evening about how we can make that more efficient. Our agricultural users, you can't grow food without water, and they're going to have to be considered in a separate category, I think. But I think we do need to be thinking about that and be working with our farmers to try to maximize their production and see what kind of savings we can get from them. I don't know whether there are more efficient ways of irrigating crops that we might partner with them to do, or if there's things we can do to make that come forward. But we do want to be looking at that. I think at this point I will support going forward with engaging the consultant group to come up with the appropriate education program. I think the city should partner with that as much as possible, and wherever we can use our staff to supplement the consultant, we do that. Try to keep the cost of it down, but we do have money allocated for this or available for this from the specific fund that can be used for that without affecting other budgets in the city. So I'm willing to approve the proposed water conservation public education program and execute the contract towards getting going with Verdon Marketing and continue to work with staff on the ordinance that we may have to bring into place sometime in the next 12 months. Be ready for that. But I do think that we do need to be mindful of usages in the city. People have already reduced their usage. I don't know that we're going to be able to count heads. My household, we were down to a two-person household a year and a half ago. We're back to four. Some of my kids have moved back in. Things happen. So you have to be flexible towards that, too. But that doesn't mean we can't still save or try to save. So we do need to be flexible with our citizens and try to save water, but also be mindful of circumstances in the families.
Councilmember Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, every time I hear the word consultant, I think about dollar bills. And it's really at the last meeting I brought up the idea of it was the largest number, and I see for our part it went from 100,000 down to 70, and I appreciate that. But the last question I asked, too, was where's the linkage between the actual marketing and empirical evidence about saving water? And there wasn't an answer back then, and I haven't seen one yet. So if we're going to go forward, I want to see empirical evidence, not anecdotal evidence, that it's actually working. That's the first step. Second step is, I think, as Joe said, I think once people get in the habit of saving, I don't think we need to keep pounding them over the head. So if we find after the first year, first of all, that number one, does show savings, and two, that it worked, and if it doesn't show savings, we should scrap it. But if it does show savings and it looks like we're on a track to keep lowering it, then we can keep going. But At some point, I don't think we need to keep telling very intelligent people what they need to do to save water. In the day of social media where we can put anything on a computer and we have water bills and we have stagecoach letter and we have all different methods of getting the word out, somebody brought up the local service clubs. There's different ways to get the information out there, and if you make those people part of the process, there's going to be more of a buy-in. People are going to be more interested in doing it if they're part of the process. So while I'll reluctantly go forward, I do have questions about the cost. And when you look back at what happened when we hired a consultant for the police department, where their estimates for the remodel were off by close to 100%, I have struggles hiring consultants. I just find it an easy out sometimes. And if we're going to do it, we need to have empirical evidence that it's working. So with that, I'm willing to go forward on a one-year basis and then have a discussion after 1 year to decide whether we keep going.
Okay. Thank you. Councilmember Barnidge.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just wanted to, I think Tim made note of it, but I just wanted to let Ms. Shemandel know that it was $70,000, not $130,000 for the consultant. You had just brought that up. And then also on the rebate with Mrs. Welsh talked about the rebate for the washers. I think that is a good idea. I know we have a limited merchants who sell washers and a range of washers. And so if we could just explore that, I think that would be a good thing to do.
That's just simple direction from council to staff. We were trying to use the program to also promote our local businesses, and that's where it came from. So
right.
if you think the other is a higher priority, just let us know. Yeah.
Well, I understand that, and I agree with that. But if I'd rather have them save the water overall than keep the business here. Of course, I want to, but we just don't have as many options in Arroyo Grande. So I understand the intent, but I think it's a good idea too.
Staff had the same discussion, so okay. We know it's a tough call.
Okay, thank you. I'm ready to move forward as well. I would I'd piggyback a little bit on what Jim talked about in actually getting some numbers of those different tiers and the savings of the 10% and the 5%. And if everyone in Arroyo Grande, say, was in Tier 2 and had to save 10% of their water, how many gallons of water would that save? I think probably most people are in the Tier 1 or Tier 2. I think we sort of learned that when we went over it recently. So going forward with the caveat that we see some numbers as far as what we're actually going to realize if we put these programs in place.
Well, I have a note that we would present that when we bring the ordinance back for your consideration.
Okay, thank you. That's all right, Mr. Mayor.
I just wanted to get two questions answered that the public asked. One, are there any ag users using city water?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Any ag users using city water?
I'm not aware of anything now. Jeff may be able to report back. Some of the other planning on the zone 3 planning involves a lot of issues where we're coordinating on water issues that will impact ag, but I don't think we have any city water that.
I mean, there's certainly wells within the city that are being used for ag, but I don't think any city water.
This whole release plan with Lopez, that involves ag's considerations.
Correct. Yeah. I'm not aware. A vast majority of the ag users in Rio Grande have wells. Their source of water is groundwater, and they have rights to groundwater, entitlements to groundwater. They also have some riparian ag water rights, and that's considered as part of the downstream release program. It's part of Lopez, which is being considered with this low-level release plan. So very, very small, if any, use of city water for ag, but majority on wells. Hopefully that answers your question.
Actually, while you're up there, maybe between the two of you can answer this. I know our goal is the 20% reduction. Do you know in acre feet what we're looking at saving, at least what our goal is?
I have that.
I think we had it when we discussed it last time, but.
I got it in my notes. I believe 125 acre feet a year was the number. Don't quote me on that.
Okay. I remember something similar, but okay.
That's about 5%. That's only about a 5% savings, not 20.
That brings up a point I thought was important for the audience that's been speaking, though, is this. We came in June and did discuss a very comprehensive effort that included a long list of many of the things that people have been talking about. This meeting was just bringing back a couple that the council hadn't approved or decided at that time. So I do want to make sure everybody understands we're really dealing with this in a very comprehensive manner.
And I think I'll start. That was going to be the first one of my comments, is that in a previous meeting, we actually came up with what I'll call the physical conservation efforts that and what we expected to actually accomplished through each one of those, and that staff felt that this is paramount to getting those to work, let alone getting people to take 5-minute showers and all those other issues, that we needed the kind of water awareness to get people to take out their lawn, to get people to put in low flow toilets, to get them to do all those kinds of operations we have, that in fact we need this kind of a program to even make that work. And the mention was made of the water bills, and it's in all our water bills as it is, and we haven't seen the kind of reduction that we need to see. I'm in the hotel business. I know that, and I heard the call that, you know, can we tie each component of this back to, you know, how many, by doing Facebook, how many gallons of water we're going to save. I'm in the hotel business, and we actually come fairly close to what we call return on investment, that, you know, for every time somebody hits our website, we know that 1 in 3 people buys a hotel room, and we can measure how many people hit our website from Google AdWords, and we can empirically come up with a number. I don't see any way we could do that here other than the sort of the gross number that says our goal is to save X amount of water, and this will get us there. And if we're not making progress on that through this, then at some point we would abandon. In fact, we're not making significant progress in the beginning. I think it is anecdotal, but I do think there is a demonstration that this kind of program will work if in fact it's properly targeted. I will say my one concern with this is when you look at our demographic, this is really web intensive, and I'm not sure that our demographic fits that. I'm not a Facebooker. That doesn't mean that I'm not going to be aware of it, but because there are other methods here. But I do have some concerns that it is far too, because that's the new thing that everybody's into, but I'm not sure that the regular old print media isn't going to be the best way to reach our demographic. So that's a more general comment about it. I do think we've got to start it, because we've looked at way more than 5 years, I'm going to say 10 or 12 years, we've looked at multitudes of ways of getting physical water, whether it was looking at state water, whether it was looking at a bladder dam, whether it was looking at desal. We looked at even capturing some water and using it in some restricted spaces that could actually come directly out of the sand district, and they are all way more expensive than what would be $1,000 an acre feet here that they're hoping to accomplish. So I'm in favor of this. We'll review each year. I assume we will review the expenses. I think this is a good start, and we'll take a look at, as far as the education program. We will take a look at, I prefer we call it a marketing program. I just would, because that's really what we're trying to do. We're trying to sell people on making these changes. And we can call it education because we're government, I guess, but we should call it what it is, which is marketing. I do struggle a little bit with the shared costs here. I do think we're probably carrying a little more of the burden than is really fair, but I also recognize that if we don't get some participation from these communities that probably don't have the kind of funds available we do, that most of the benefits will accrue to them anyway, because we'll be doing the advertising in very broad segments. So I'm in favor of moving forward with the public education program. I also like staff's direction here with the hybrid, because it is almost impossible to come up with a method that is fair. The one thing that, like, I really want to see that it works. I'll share that my experience in Santa Barbara was when Santa Barbara went through their drought program, when they came out of it on the other side, they didn't have enough money for their water program, because they had created these huge tiers. Everybody had gone into the lowest tier, and all of a sudden they had to raise everybody's rates because nobody was using enough water, and then they had to go find more water users. And I just want to be sure when we put together this kind of scenario that it's plausible that it will work. And as I used the trash example, I was kind of struck when I finally, you know, did the math on, you know, here we were going to offer this lower price trash can. If everybody went to that, or if every, you know, a lot of people could, then we would just be raising the rate on the low trash cans because it really is a fixed cost. I think the one thing we might add to it, though, is looking at what I'll call the ultimate water saver. You know, maybe it's a household that's using less than 6 units. I don't know if there's anybody using that, but there's a point where you just can't get any lower. And I don't think it's incredible that there are probably households that use 6 or 7, you know, units. But I do think we might look at a point where we just say, if you're below this, you don't have to save at all. You know, I think over time, I think that the education program and the tiering and the expenses associated with water will, in fact, a lot of the bigger water users will disappear over time. That would certainly be our goal, would be to focus on the bigger water users first. I'm in general favor of the direction that staff is going on the ordinance. I would really rather see it a little firmer than, you know, so that we're not on the day, you know, once we decide to implement it and we have, you know, 100 people here because we're talking about fining people, that we have a really solid basis for how we're going to move forward rather than, well, maybe it's 20 or maybe it's 10 or, you know that we have a little stronger sense of how we would do that. The other thing that I wonder about, too, is we have a really hard criteria at this point. You know, 100% use of, you know, trips. What is our criteria going to be for when we go to phase one? And can we build that into an ordinance, or is it just, you know, I do think we need to have some sort of background on when that would start, and I didn't see that here.
On the stage one?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, basically we said that each month we'd be doing analysis, and any point that our analysis showed that within the next 6-month period, that because of any impacts, projected impacts to either or both water sources was going to bring our demand, bring our supply below our projected demand, then that would trigger a stage one. If we felt that was either anticipated or possible or expected, that would be the triggering factor.
So for instance, when we voluntarily reduced our pumping because there was concern about water intrusion, we would take that number and somehow extrapolate that into that's now like a limitation on our water use? Is that?
I don't think, that would be complicated. I'm not sure that would qualify if it's a voluntary, because that would actually be protecting that water source. But when it got to the point where we knew that water source wasn't going to be available, so it has to do with the two things. On Lopez, it's the release plan. When that's triggered, we know we're going to get a reduction in water, and then they'll let us know how much that reduction use is. With groundwater, it really comes down to the criteria that we would set with the groundwater monitoring, and once, you know, those wells reached a certain level, that would trigger a decision that well water would then have to be cut by a certain percentage too.
Okay. So I guess in conclusion, I'm in favor of moving forward. I think the sooner that we move forward with water conservation is the most cost-effective way of achieving what is, for us, as I've said this a number of times, a relatively small number that we need to get to. At least it is today. It may change based on the 2 or 3 year drought, but and compared to going out and capturing new water, and I am also in favor of the basic plan that staff's put together. I just want to see how it scenarios out to make sure that it's plausible that it'll work out like we think. Thank you.
And we had planned to do that. There's a lot more details, so we'll try to provide those before we get too far along.
All right. Well, much of what I wanted to say has already been said many times. I do want to add a couple of notes to some of the topics that my colleagues brought up and also members of the public have brought up. I think historically we've looked at other drought situations, and when we put the word out, somebody mentioned paying attention to what you get in your water bill. in previous years, we haven't done things much more sophisticated than that, and they have achieved results. I know that we set targets for the community, and the community surpassed those targets. And as has been indicated, it was kind of a bittersweet thing because the more you conserve, the less money you have to pay. But those monies are enterprise funds that help maintain our water system. And without that money, we can't maintain our water system. So people were conserving and paying less, and we found ourselves in a position where we had to maintain some funding level in order to maintain the system itself. The reason why I bring up the cry to the community to conserve, I'm looking, Mary, at your presentation, and while I will go ahead with the council and support this for the first year, but I'm thinking that the public outreach program itself, the system, the strategies that you put in place, I think there needs to be a quicker feedback mechanism to determine results more quickly, and in turn, that feedback strategy. Results in terms or results will determine the need to perhaps move to the next step or the next strategy. In other words, make it a progressive process so we don't move into an area where we really don't need to go. We don't go into a heavy social networking kind of thing if we're reaching our goals. And so I would like to see this be driven by results and instead of kind of moving with a prescripted plan and giving it to us whether we need it or not. So that would be a and that's something that, you know, you can orchestrate with staff. Jeff already talked about the right to farm ordinance. There was a question about water going to our farming community. Well, I'll tell you what, if you think you're all here for a sensitive situation tonight, that pales by comparison if we were to deal with the agriculture's our economy. It's been here forever. It's what the town was founded and built upon. So I know that they are doing their level best to conserve. They've gone to alternative irrigation, and they're doing the best that they can, but somebody mentioned without water there's no food and there's no jobs. I like the hybrid approach. I like the trigger mechanism in the phases that you mentioned, Steve. I just wanted to say a quick word about somebody mentioned water storage and some of the other water conservation measures. If you've been reading the newspaper, I know you've heard about the water bond. Historically, things like water storage or additional storage have been opposed by certain special interest groups because they've been labeled as being growth inducive. It takes a drought emergency statewide like we have right now for people to rethink their position and their own personal philosophies. And that's what's happening in Sacramento right now. The water bond that is coming forth contains a substantial amount of money for water storage that would be available to municipalities to apply for. Most importantly, there's been a lot of discussion about water recycling and also, what we're doing to try and deter saltwater intrusion into our water basin. I think there's about $1.6 billion in that water bond. I'm not sure if it's going to be a recurring allocation or not, but certainly the water recycling monies available caught our attention, particularly with the South County Sanitation Plant. And I wanted to mention that we do have a kind of, we're rethinking a new strategy that might lead us to recycling off of the premises of the South County Sanitation Plant itself, which would reduce costs and would get us closer to being able to use that recycled water directly to infuse into our groundwater basin to improve the wells. It's a substantially, well, I should say it's an incredibly reduced price from trying to put something like that in at the plant and then having to install piping and infrastructure to get it to where we would need to recharge the water basin. So the water basin study that's in process right now is going to help us do that. I'm not sure if we can do it. It will require a little bit of land acquisition, but not much. And again, a significantly reduced cost. So, and the other thing, I don't know if Mary Lucy's still here, but the strategy that's being put forth would be we would recycle the water. We would be able to recycle the water only from the Arroyo Grande trunk line. It would not be Grover or Grover would still go into the plant. Oceano would still go into the sanitation plant. But Arroyo Grande has the bulk of the sewer volumes, sewage volume that goes into that plant. So if we can offset that, it would be, I think, something close to 800,000 gallons a day. So that would help significantly. And so we're, everything's on the table right now. And we're hoping that we can get a project, some conceptual project moving forward so that we can be close to shovel ready when this money becomes available if the water bond passes, which is a big if. And but I know it sailed out of the legislature with almost a unanimous vote. So it's the first time in a long time that we've seen people on both sides of the aisle talking to one another. So, you know, with that, Steve, and also adding some of the additional strategies into the plan that we talked about, I would like to see us, you know, if it gets significantly worse, then look at a temporary moratorium. And then the other things we mentioned as well. Okay. Anybody want to try a motion?
Mr. Mayor, I move the approval of the proposed water conservation public education program and that we authorize city manager to execute a consultant services agreement with Bird Marketing Incorporated to develop and implement the water conservation public education program. Appropriate $70,000 from the water neutralization fund for the water conservation public education program and direct staff to develop a water shortage contingency plan ordinance to be used only in the case of a future emergency based on two emergency stages. Which requires residential customers to reduce water usage by an identified percentage during stage one and allocate a minimum amount of water per household during stage two using the hybrid methodology and with the recommendations that were made on the dais here in terms of working with the consultant to have it in a stage, the educational program stage.
Okay. Everybody got that? Is there a second?
Second.
I have a question, if I might.
Okay, discussion. We have a motion and a second discussion.
I just had a point of clarification. Are we going to look back at this in a year, or are we adopting a five-year plan, or what's the idea behind?
We are only requesting the first-year funding, and then we would like to look back and go from there in terms of.
That's the intention of the motion.
Thank you.
Anything else? Any other discussion? All right. We have a motion and a second. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. All right. I've been requested for us for a short necessity break. We're going to make it very short, 5 minutes. That's just if all of you don't crowd in front of us at the one restroom that we have here. Communication up above the reports. So that will be our next item. And so, council communication, as I indicated at the beginning of the meeting, is an opportunity for the council to make a determination as to whether or not the issues that have been discussed earlier this evening would warrant us agendizing this and having a discussion in terms of where we want to go with it. And who would like to start? I'll go last.
I would.
Okay.
I would recommend that we agendize the issue of a independent investigator. I also believe we should agendize as part of that discussion what the scope of that investigation should be and who that should be. It's important that if we're going to do this and we're going to try to be transparent, that we use someone that is truly independent. I also don't want to use somebody that's going to cost us an arm and a leg. This has already gone farther than it should in terms of cost in my mind. So I am recommending that we agendize it, and specifically I'm recommending that while any personnel action obviously would probably be in closed session, I'm asking that at least initially that the meeting start with a public process that included discussion about, like I said, the scope of the process, who should do the process, and so forth. So I'm suggesting that in an effort to get this issue resolved once and for all, that we start with a public process that may turn into a closed session. And I'm also suggesting and requesting that if that's the will of the council, that we do it as soon as possible and that we don't wait any longer than we should, because I think it affects city business.
Okay. You want to go next?
I agree. I think that the issue of public trust, the issue of transparency is significant enough that we do go forward with agendizing this. Let's bring it back. Let's put it on the agenda at the next meeting. Let's get to discuss them. We'll put all the ramifications together, the scope, and we can go forward from that. But, yeah, I do think we should agendize it.
Okay. All right.
I too, am supportive of the agendizing, but I have a slightly different take on it. Turn it off. And that's what I would not want to wait until the 2 weeks until the next meeting. I would want to see an expedited process, maybe even because I'm not quite sure what kind of time, and David can help us with this, would be involved in for staff to be ready. We are coming up against a 3-day weekend, but I'd like to see us even trying to do this week, either this Thursday or this Friday, and I guess what it would be an emergency meeting, so that we can expedite this process and get it started.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't know, because it's not agendized, how much I can comment, but I'd like to say a little more than what's being said, and I don't think it's anything that that is not okay to discuss. When this came to our attention, myself as well as the entire council took this matter very seriously. I think you all know us well enough to know that this is something that we really, really, really were interested in hearing more about. We wanted to get to the bottom of it. I feel that Mr. Carmel and Mr. Mann did a very thorough investigation. They interviewed the officers. They asked if there was any extra information that they would like to share. As Mr. McMahon noted, he had not spoken to us at all. He had not spoken to the mayor or, I believe, Mr. Adams. And so I think that investigation was done correctly. After they came back with the information, there was no evidence of illicit behavior. And because there was no evidence, there was just speculation possibly. We couldn't base anything on speculation. And I would think that myself, as well as any of you, would like to have the evidence before you as fact. If your job was on the line, or if your reputation was on the line, I think to speculate is not fair. And we looked at the information, and there were no facts that indicated, as I said, there was illicit behavior that had gone on. I will say that I am in favor of an outside investigation. I think that would put everyone's mind at ease, and I think I am in favor of doing it as soon as possible. And I would also say that Mr. Adams and Mrs. McClish are stellar employees that I have worked with for the last 14 years. And, you know, it's not the most wonderful outcome what happened that evening. But I think when decisions were made what to do, that's the decisions that they went with. And I think at the time of the actions, it was a good decision for what was happening at that time. I don't think it takes away from the incredible service they've given to our community. I think that we made our way through the recession in the city because of staff and Steve Adams and Teresa. Our city is in a lot better shape than other cities around the county, and it is because of our staff. So I wanted to give that information, put that out there. And I also I am concerned about the cost to the taxpayers. You know, here we're bringing in another consultant, and I'm willing to do it so that we can all move forward and we can get on to real city business. But I would love to know what this might cost. Thank you.
Well, first of all, thank you, Kristen, for making those statements. You know, this has been rough for everyone. It's been rough for the community. It's been rough for the council. It's certainly been difficult for our city manager and our community development director. They have spouses, they have families, kids in school, and you can only imagine how this has gone for them. The issues that Kristen brought up, I think, are significant. The other thing that I want to, in terms of their terms of service, there was a comment, and we did have to be very careful, and I think David will be the first one to tell you that what we do discuss in closed session pretty much has to stay there unless the employees who are the subject of that discussion are okay with us talking about it publicly. Many of you remember a few months back the very long process that the city of Morro Bay went through when they were discussing termination of their city manager and their city attorney. All of that was done in closed session. You had a good sector of the community that was clamoring for information about what's going on, and they literally, legally could not say anything. So there are those challenges for municipalities, and we're no different in this situation when you're focusing squarely on matters that might include discipline at whatever level, then that communication has to be guarded. We didn't write the law. So, and on the issue of discipline, I think I mentioned to Cynthia Lambert from the Tribune that, and I think she put it in the newspaper, that we didn't let this go. We didn't. All of us looked at this situation and we were very, very surprised. And all of us, I think, some of us several times, you could call it a very significant reprimand. But the reprimand that we gave to Steve, I can tell you right now, he beat us to the punch. This is the first scar on a 14-year stellar record, and he was the first to admit, look, I screwed up, I messed up, poor judgment, shouldn't have done it. Yes, we could tell him the same thing, but we weren't telling him anything that he didn't already know himself. None of us are perfect. I would venture to guess that none of you are perfect. We've all been in difficult situations. Sometimes we make the right choice, sometimes we don't. I have confidence that Mike McMahon did probably the best job he could. And I did want to mention to you that, you know, there's been some indication that people have said, well, this is an in-house investigation. You could call it that. We contract with Carmel and Nakasha for all of our legal work. We don't have an in-house city attorney, and that means that we have a private firm that we contract with that has a lot of municipal clients. They have other clients as well, not on the municipal side. If they were even remotely suspected of doing any kind of a cover-up, you can imagine what would happen to that client base. They don't risk that. Nobody would risk that kind of thing. And it is not uncommon for a contract city attorney to do those kinds of investigations. They do them for cities all over the state, all over the country. It's part of the contract. So it is not uncommon for this to be the first step. And generally, they will come back and tell you, okay, there's something here. We need to dig deeper. We need to go and find someone who can do a more thorough investigation. And it's not uncommon for that kind of feedback to come back. That didn't happen in this particular case. So that's what led us to kind of the progressive positions that we found ourselves in. As far as where we are right now, I'm fine with the rest of the council. I think we do need to sit down and discuss this and figure out where we go from here. If it is, in fact, bringing in another investigator, so be it. If that's what it takes to have this gray cloud kind of wander away and dissipate, then perhaps that's what we need to do. But certainly we need to thoroughly examine this, and we can't do it if it's not on the agenda. So obviously that's something that we need to bring back and put on the agenda. We'll be working with David, and probably Tim will be back from vacation by then, and determine how the process is going to go. We will try our level best to be as transparent as the law will allow us to be in this particular situation. As far as the timing of it, I don't think I can make it this week. But we can discuss when we bring the special meeting back. We're going to have to look at all of our calendars and decide when we've got a spot. We might be able to accelerate it, shorten it by a week, but I'm looking at my schedule and it's pretty crowded for the next couple of next week or so.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
What is the notice requirement?
For a special meeting, 24 hours.
Thank you.
We'll try and make it more than 24 hours so that we can make sure that that you all know it's coming. But I think you can, I think probably you would agree that we need to resolve this quicker, sooner than later, and not have it continue to linger. So we will do whatever it takes to get us there. So with that, I'm hearing consensus that it will be placed on a subsequent agenda, more details to follow as soon as we can coordinate calendars. Does that pretty much sum it up?
Yep.
Okay. You're welcome to hang around for council reports, but thank you all for being here. Okay, we'll go back to city council reports. I was in Sacramento the last time the COG meeting met. I think, Joe, you covered for me on that one, so we'll include that in your report. I did attend the last South County Sanitation District meeting. The plant is operating very well. We're using a considerably lesser amount of chlorine and other chemicals because of the process that they have in place. The good news is the methane return is really working well. We're no longer, some of you may know this, we're not flaring off methane. That's going back into a heater. and a boiler at the plant and provides our hot water, which we desperately need at the plant. It's saving us about anywhere between $3,000 to $5,000 a month in natural gas bills. So that's really working out well. We did have, I won't repeat myself, but we did have a pretty robust discussion on the water recycling issue. Rick Sweet and Shannon Sweeney were there and talked about it. And I think there's some real potential there, Steve, but it's kind of thinking outside the box in terms of, and there are a lot of twists and turns here in terms of land acquisition and positioning and things like that, but they've already been in touch with a consultant who's doing the groundwater basin study in terms of locating it strategically where it could do a more effective job of groundwater recharge. So we know a general vicinity where we might go with this thing, but I think they need about an acre to do this. Mm-hmm. And so it'll be interesting to see how that part of it goes. The only other thing that I wanted to mention, you know, we had a very spirited discussion previously on the charter, and there was a lot of discussion on Senate Bill 7, SB 7, which was the prevailing wage. That matter is going to be heard, and it was postponed twice. It's going to be heard tomorrow in San Diego Superior Court. So by the end of tomorrow, we should have a fairly good idea what direction the court is going to go in. They've already collected all their briefs, so I don't expect the judge to take very long, whatever direction he goes in. We should hear on that tomorrow. Tomorrow evening at the latest. That concludes my report. Mayor Pro Tem.
South County Area Transit has not met since our last report, but I will say they did a really great bus rodeo, which is where they drive buses in really tight areas, and there's some very, very good bus drivers. You can tell why we have, we tried to get me to do it, but having never driven a bus, I chose not to do one in that situation. But I was a judge. I was really impressed with the skill of our drivers. I can see why we have a very low accident rate in this community. No report from Economic Vitality Corporation, but I do know that they are working with Steve to arrange to come and make a formal presentation to us sometime in the near future. The meeting this time was their annual sponsor mixer. Thank you for the sponsor. So there was no report from that. I do not have a report on Joint Powers Authority, and I did attend one of the SAND district meetings for the mayor, but there was nothing specific that came out of that. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll start out with the SLOCOG meeting. And much as Jim just mentioned, there wasn't a whole lot reportable that went on there. We had a public hearing on the Federal Transportation Improvement and Program Amendment, which was just some minor changes. Looked at overview of some of the things that are going to go on with the U.S. 101 corridor, master plan update, the scenic byway, all of these things that were under consideration, and there was nothing, no decisions being made. This was simply looking at the options. We're in the, you know, $1.5 billion, and we're not going to get that kind of money. So a lot of the projects that might be out there just won't be able to be funded, so they're not going to come forward. It'll take some decision-making by you and the rest of the board, SLOCOG board, decide what will be funded and go forward. I think that was pretty much the gist of that meeting. They did redirect some dollars towards the Pismo Preserve that became available because the Cave Landing Coastal Trail segment was denied by the Coastal Commission, which freed up some dollars for park development from the transportation funding. So they did redirect some dollars towards that, as we directed some of our dollars here in the city towards the Pismo Preserve. So that did go forward. In terms of the APCD, APCD did not meet. They're dark in July for vacation purposes, so there was no meeting where there normally would have been one. Just as we were dark for the city council meeting, the second city council meeting of July, we decided we weren't going to have that. I think there was some speculation as to why that happened. That was something we decided on a couple of months ago, I believe. So it wasn't a spur-of-the-moment thing for our cancellation of the 2nd July council meeting. That was a vacation consideration, much as the APCD meeting was a vacation consideration. Five Cities Fire Authority, we did have our meeting. The process of recruiting the chief officer continues to go forward. Nothing specific to report on that at this point yet. We did adopt a set of protocol for the administrative board hearings and meetings and agendas for the Five Cities Fire Authority, which we didn't have anything specific in writing before. It was simply a traditional tradition of following the procedures that we've been following, but we've now adopted a formal process, which is fairly simple, and we'll keep those meetings moving smoothly. And that is all I have to report tonight.
Okay, very good. Councilmember Brown.
Thank you. Steve, I don't know if you have the overhead that I was hoping to put up. Do you know if...
Aileen... did she take off? I think she thought you had wanted it up during the consent calendar. So
She took off. Okay, no problem.
Yeah, she had planned to do that for you.
No, that's fine. Thank you. During the consent agenda, we approved the The integrated waste didn't meet, so the only thing I have to report on is the RAC. And during the consent agenda, we approved the San Luis Obispo 2014 Integrated Regional Water Management Plan, and I had a copy of this put in each one of your boxes, so hopefully you got it. The only thing I really wanted to show you or talk to you about is the subcategories. It's on page 21 of that summary, and Teresa's been very diligent about trying to get us in line for grant money as it comes down, and she's particularly been working on this one issue called development tools, conceptual and groundwater flow models, and then also developing a uniform groundwater monitoring program for the South County groundwater basins. There's a whole number of other issues that were identified there, and you can read them at your leisure. I think they did a really good job, and as usual, we have to go through these long processes in order to be in line for grant money, and in some ways it was frustrating how long it took, but it's very key given kind of where we're at with water issues these days. So I would encourage you to read the whole executive summary at a minimum and look at page 21 in particular. So those are my reports, Mr. Mayor.
All right, good. Thank you. Council Member Barnett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Zone 3 Water Advisory Board, I think I have reported since we last met. The Tourism Committee, we did meet and we took a look at the video that everyone from the city had put together with various sort of chicken dances and such. We saw the rough draft of that, and I think they're going to make some modifications, and then we'll see it at our next meeting. And we had a very small part. We might even be axed out of it eventually. I think we were so bad. I mean, they almost just cut to the person after us. We weren't good. Our chicken dance was no good. Anyway, and then
I told you, but no, you guys had.
You put me in front, and we looked bad. That's all I can say. It wasn't pretty. The Homeless Services Coordinating Council did meet. The one thing I don't think that I have seen is they're going to be asking for each city in the county to contribute $2,143 for a homeless survey count. Every 2 years, HUD requires the county to count the number of homeless people so that we can apply for grants. And a contractor was selected by an ad hoc committee, and they evenly split it up between all the cities, and they were asking for $2,100. Steve, are you, I don't know if you've gotten that information from the county on that small request. Okay. Yeah, so that I think that will be coming soon, and I think that was really it. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Well, even though we move council communication up, there is one more item on council communication that I think both Kristen and I promised that we would introduce to see where all of you are on that. There's been some feedback from our car dealership, specifically Malahi Ford, with regard to the Strawberry Festival. And as you all know, that happens over Memorial Day weekend, and the circulation disruptions and all of those kinds of things. They showed me their sales volume for that weekend and all of the other dealers in the area, and of course their sales volumes, both of them, were sort of in the tank. Clients couldn't get to them, at least not easily, and they wound up going to another dealer. And so Mike Malahi was suggesting that we might look at another weekend for Strawberry Festival. I discussed that with Bob Lund, and he took it to the VIA board. The VIA board, I think, was unanimous in their opposition to moving it. They said moving it to another weekend would kill the festival. I think the revenues from the Strawberry Festival, if I recall what Bob told me, they fund things like Christmas in the Village, all of the banners for special events and signs for special events. The biggie is the revenues fund the summer concert series, which brings in a lot of people, and I think a couple of other small events as well. So,
could I ask a question?
When I'm done.
Oh, sorry.
So what Mike asked us to do was to bring this to the council to see if there's any interest in putting it on the agenda. I would imagine it would be a new business item, and discussing it, or how you all feel about it. If you know, chime in, Kristen, if you want to.
Well, I think that we had talked about possibly if we had the event, Strawberry Festival, on another weekend. I sort of felt personally like Memorial Day weekend was a big weekend, as it just because it's a 3-day weekend for people to come and visit Arroyo Grande and wine taste and visit the village. In of itself, the Memorial Day weekend, and then you compound it with the Strawberry Festival, and then we get, you know, the huge festival, which we know is a benefit. There's lots of benefits that go along with it. So when he first brought it up, Mr. Malahi, I thought maybe we could get the best of both worlds, where we capture the people wanting to vacation on Memorial Day weekend, and we have a nice, a little bit more of a mellow celebration, yet we still have, you know, maybe some sort of events, you know, that have to do with actually Memorial Day. And then, you want me to be quiet? Am I saying way too much?
What we're trying to determine
I was going. I had all kinds of information to share.
Is this something you want to put on the agenda or not?
I think it's appropriate to put it on the agenda. Then we can discuss it and see if there are any options or alternatives that we might be able to pursue.
I'm fine with it. I just had one quick question for you.
Okay.
Do you know roughly what the revenue is that the village folks bring in from the Strawberry Festival?
No. Bob has those figures, so that might be another reason why.
Yeah, bring that. Bring that back
on the agenda so we can get all those figures out.
Thank you.
Steve wants to say that I'm in favor of doing it.
Okay. Just one question: would you like Councilmember Barnage and myself to also, before we bring it to the council, bring it to the tourism committee so they could make a recommendation and discuss some of these issues and. Might be helpful.
Yeah, you know, I think the more information, obviously, the more robust staff report we have. I expect there'll be, probably the whole VIA board will be here, and I know probably the two car dealerships will be represented as well. So, all right, so we're good to go then. We can probably put this on the next regular agenda or whenever we have room for it. Sooner, as long as we don't forget about it. So, okay, is that all right, Kristen?
That's fine with me. Kelly was asking me when the tourism meeting is. It's probably, I don't know, but we can talk to Judith probably in the next 2 weeks, I think. Seems like we're due for one.
Okay, staff communication, anything, Steve?
I just thought I might mention, because we were talking about all the water items, that I'm working with the other agencies in the NCMA area to put together a joint meeting that we'd like to probably conduct with the mayor of each jurisdiction, the Zone 3 board representative, city manager, and public works director, to really go through the things. We've kind of taken the lead. The council's already approved most of those measures, but we really feel it would be good to have a joint meeting with the leaders of the different agencies and make sure we're all on board, because we're all kind of at different places of commitment in terms of moving forward, and we really need each other. And so we thought that might be a good step, might be expand to a full-on joint meeting with all the elected officials later, but we thought it would be a good step with have the mayor and the zone 3 rep for the first meeting, if that sounds okay to everybody.
Okay, thank you. That takes us to the last item, which is our final community comments and suggestions. This is new.
All in one day. Barbara Harmon, 216 South Mason Street. But you were, coincidentally, there was a discussion about Strawberry Festival just like last week when I was talking with folks. And one of the ideas that came up, you know, the vacant parcel that's supposed to be the rec center? Is there any remote way that the staging for the Strawberry Festival, it could still be on the Memorial Day weekend, but the staging of all the vendors could be put up in that area on that lot? The community, the regional center parking could help and assist with some of the parking and staging, and then we could get a trolley type situation to bring people and folks into the village that want to have lunch, that want to buy a car at Malahi Ford, but to kind of divert the traffic circulation, you know, through the Grand Avenue, where a traffic way gets a break that might alleviate some of the concerns that Malahi Ford is bringing up. So I just didn't know if that might be an option or a suitable solution to that. It seems like it would be large enough, and even we might even be able to, there might be able to be an option for the St. Patrick's School to use their ball fields for parking and maybe make a little money for their programs, you know, charge people $5 a carload or whatever and use their fields for parking, and then they can make money for their sports programs or something like that. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out since it did come up and people seem to be talking about it to try to assist some of the car dealers. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because that was one of the things that I think both Kristen and I were talking about in terms of you know, ways in which we could reduce the impact, the traffic impacts mm-hmm. on traffic way, and maybe even some reposition some of the activity in that area of traffic way. Mm-hmm. But Mike didn't seem to think that would help.
It's still the volume.
So, yeah, it's still just the overall volume of traffic and redirecting mm-hmm. it around the area of Branch Street that's blocked off. Mm-hmm. That we can't get away from. So, anyway.
Well, sounds like you guys have your work cut out for you.
Yeah,
right.
So, but, I mean, we were thinking along those same lines. Yeah. So, okay, thanks.
Thanks, that's all. Thanks.
Anyone else? Gail, anything?
I was kind of disappointed that the consideration of water conservation, public education program, and water shortage, kind of blah, 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 was put together, because it drug on so long. Because the issue of the consultant probably was the main issue. The other issue is going to come back before you, and people will have more chance to go into all of that. It would have been, I know you have so many public hearings, and it's a temptation to combine things, but if you stick with a single issue, then it goes a little bit faster. This drug out, you know, tonight, because people were talking more about the issue of the water than they were about should we hire this consultant, which is your biggest, that was your biggest consideration tonight, correct?
So, I mean, we do that all the time. There are bills, legislation, Congress, they all want to lump everything together, and it just confuses the issue, and we don't deal with things as directly as we might be able to. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. All right. Item 16 is closed session. We have none tonight. And so we will go to the last item, which is adjournment. So thank you very much, all of you, for this evening. We are adjourned.